WFIM.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We went back and listened to a conversation the guys had with Muhammad Olooney, better known as Ray and Pete's vodka supplier.
Sometime when he was drunk, he'd been throwing up in the on himself.
He'd be throwing up on himself?
Yeah.
Is that right? Would he actually puke on himself outside?
We were seeing him in the street. He'd been throwing up in himself.
Oh, man.
How much vodka did they go through in, say,
Oulu, Finland? All right. Actually, this show is set up as what we call public affairs broadcasting. Right. This is exactly the time that this is all designed for. It's not sour grapes either. You may remember some of you that I was doing full-time talk radio for about 2.5 years, and I've done it other periods in my life, and I don't know. A lot of you will write in and say, boy, you ought to be on Air America, or can't you get another full-time job? I don't know, folks. I mean, I've got something to say every day, just like you, but it's sort of sweet just doing this on Sunday nights. Anyways, we'll see what happens. All right, in a way, I was just stalling until we hit 11 o'clock Eastern time here in Detroit because we started a couple minutes early. Welcome back. I didn't even look to see whether we've got any emails yet here. All right, we're going to just wait a move. Does that mean we are not streaming? That sound is the microphone. All right, before I get just too discombobulated, let's talk. You can either start things by calling 313-298-WRIF and raising a subject, or you can listen to some of the things that I'm having, that I'm about to say, and comment on those as well. You can also email me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I guess maybe you needed the email address. So hopefully, come on. I mean, I can't believe we could be not streaming for 3 weeks in a row. Anyways, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And my website, peterwerbe.com, PETERWERBE.com. And that's where some of the articles that we'll discuss and quote from will be. As we're talking, there is a massacre and the destruction of a city being carried out by United States troops, ordered there by George W. Bush, illegally, unnecessarily. And it is a situation that kind of falls beneath our recognition, unless the media decides to pump it up. Now, I'll talk a little about the media later as well. As we speak, in Najaf, Iraq, U.S. tanks and troops rolled back into the center of Najaf and battled with Shiite militants Sunday, reigniting violence in the holy city just as delegates in Baghdad opened a conference meant to be a landmark in the country's movement towards democracy. At least that's the intent of George Bush. Now, and more and more people being killed. The massacre is that there are hundreds and maybe thousands of people being killed. The media has been ordered out. This is extraordinarily, frightening development, because when the media is ordered out of a battle area, it generally means something pretty bad is going to happen. The Iraq government did that, but they're mostly a puppet government operating at the behest of the people that installed them. Now, think about this. Well, you know, actually, I can illustrate this a little by an article from the New York Times that was August 15th. That's today. Muwafaq al-Rubai'i, I'm not quite sure how to say that name, R-U-B-A-I-E, Rubai'i, let's call him, the national security advisor to Dr. Alawi, who was the president, announced the breakdown of talks with the militants, right, and promised that military operations would resume. Dr. Rubai'i, 57, a British-trained neurologist who returned from 20 years of exile after the toppling of Saddam Hussein last year, added, So what do we have here? The militants, as they are called, and once a labeling occurs, then what? The first off, it's the beginning of a process of dehumanization. I mean, any number of other labels could be put on them. Militias. I mean, sometimes they are called militia members. But militants are bad, evil. Now, the difference is, though, they were born and raised in Iraq. I mean, they're not people I have any sympathy with. They're Muslim fundamentalists who want a Islamic government with the rules of Islam enforced by the political state. Bad set of rules, bad state of affairs. Well, I don't know. I mean, the rules, they elect personally to adopt them. That's their business. But when you start having political governments enforce religious rules on people, well, we've seen what that's led to throughout history. And that's one of the reasons there's a strong prohibition in the American Constitution demanding a separation of church and state, something that the Bush regime is constantly trying to break down. To the benefit of one religion, his. Of course, you know, God speaks through him. Now, again, it's a little hard to claim legitimacy for the, quote, government of Iraq when it was installed by a foreign army who illegally and unnecessarily invaded the country. So now, as we edge up towards 1,000 American troops killed for this fool's errand, people are revolting against the puppets. Now, this is what is like Vietnam. This is what is like Vietnam. Not that we're necessarily mired in a quagmire, but the political quality of it is very similar. The United States manages to get itself involved in essentially a civil war thousands of miles away from our home, winds up killing a disproportionately high number of citizens of that country, kills our young men who are killing those civilians and also the troops that are opposing the presence of the United States there. So why shouldn't, for instance, al-Sadr's army establish itself as the government in Najaf and some of the other places where it operates? What more or less, or let me put it this way, what less legitimacy does al-Sadr have than Alawi, the installed president of Iraq? Tell me about that. In the meantime, the deaths continue. The deaths continue there. About 10,000 demonstrators from as far away as Baghdad arrived in Najaf on Saturday to show their solidarity, again, with the militants and act as human shields to protect the city and the holy Imam Ali shrine, where fighters from al-Sadr's Mahdi army have taken refuge since the fighting started on August 5th. See, this is now political. Bush can't allow a, quote, defeat or a victory of the, quote, militants. All of this, by the way, I don't know why this is in this pack. This has to do with more with the election. Dick Cheney was in Iowa on Tuesday and said that the presidential candidate John Kerry lacks a basic understanding of the war on terrorism and cannot make America safer. Senator Tom Harkin, who is a Iowa Democrat, said, "When I hear this from Dick Cheney, who was a coward, who had not served during the Vietnam War, it makes my blood boil." Remember, Dick Cheney said he had better things to do. And Harkin, Senator Harkin, continues, "Those of us who served and those of us who went in the military don't like it when someone like a Dick Cheney comes out and wants to be tough." "Yeah, he'll be tough," says Harkins. "He'll be tough with somebody else's blood, somebody else's kids, but not when it was his turn to go." Cheney, like Bush and most of the rest of them, almost all of these warmongering Republicans, are chicken hawks. They could have served at various times in the military, but they made sure that it was some young working class or minority or, you know, person that was motivated by patriotism. They're always motivated by their patriotism to send someone else. Now, this whole deal with the militant and how things with militants and how things are presented in the media, I think, is worthy of some look. I just looked at this new video called Outfoxed. You can go with a ED on the end. Outfoxed.org. Outfoxed. Rupert Murdoch's War on Journalism. Rupert Murdoch owns Fox News and Julian other things as well. Media. I mean, he controls such a vast amount of media that this video, Outfoxed, contends that up to two-thirds of the world's population, 4 billion people, see his media. And it's done not even so much for a realization of wealth. I mean, the man is a multi-billionaire. It's not like he needs any more money, but rather to put across his far right wing agenda. In this country, of course, it's George W. Bush. That's who he supports, and that's the function of Fox News. Fox Hole News is maybe even a better way to look at it. Now, let me read a letter that I received from someone named Dave. Dave wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com, and he did so right after the show ended last week. He said, I listened to your show on WRIF tonight for the first time. I only listened for a bit, but two things struck me, he says. You painted the state of Michigan as a Democratic stronghold. You mentioned Michigan's two Democratic senators and liberal city of Detroit. Actually, I said the area around Detroit as well. Both are true. You also said we have a very Democratic congressional delegation. It so happens, he writes, the Michigan congressional delegation is 9 Republicans and 6 Democrats. In addition to the federal level, Michigan had a Republican state legislature, and our governor for 11 years was Republican. He also said that a racist would never vote Democrat. Which party is former KKK member Robert Byrd a member of? Well, the last thing is kind of stupid. Robert Byrd, who's probably one of the most liberal senators in that body, was a member of the KKK, like a lot of Southerners, unfortunately, were 50 and actually more, 60 years ago in the case of Robert Byrd. He says it was an awful mistake, and if he's talking about history, I said very clearly now, it's very clear that no one who's a racist is going to vote for Democrats. All racists are going to vote for George W. Bush, right? Okay. It's the party of bigotry, and without ever even saying it, most Americans know that. And I'm not saying that everybody that votes for Republicans are bigots or racist, but if you're a racist and a bigot, you're going to vote for the Republicans, right? That's your party. Dave says, I'm sure as a journalist you are dedicated to accuracy in presenting the whole picture, so maybe you can point these out to your listeners. Well, I just did, and I stand corrected. I said that there were, that 10 of the 11 Democrats in the Michigan delegation voted against the war resolution. So was I that far off? It was in 03, so yeah, I don't even know where I got that figure. Here is what is interesting about my error. Not so much that I made it, but, you know, I'm capable. You're streaming. Okay. All right. So people are writing in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com and saying, yeah. So a couple people. Yeah, all right. Yeah. I want to give a shout out to people listening in Pumpkin Hollow, Tennessee. All right. So that's one group. I can't really read all this at the same time. But so we got little town down there in Tennessee. Anyway, what's unusual about what I just read is I made a mistake. I mean, assuming that this guy is right. Actually, no, I did look it up, and I was incorrect. And he is correct. There are 9 Republicans and 6 Democrats. I don't know where I got the 11 Democrats from. But the last thing in the world I want to do is add to the enormous stream of disinformation and lies and nonsense that comes across the airwaves both on radio and television, almost exclusively from the right wing. This was an honest mistake. They're involved in purposeful lying often. And they make so many errors, so many mistakes as well. And I got to ask you, have you ever heard any one of these guys say, when you listen here, you get the truth, ever say, you know, I really made a mistake? I've mentioned this book before. It's an old book. It's called Rush Limbaugh's Reign of Error. It's put together by Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. You can go to fair.org, fair.org, F-A-I-R.org, and the book is still available. And this isn't his opinion. It's not like, you shouldn't call people feminazis or something like that. It's up to him. Yeah, if he wants to deal on that level, fine. Let's deal with women in our lives and calling them Nazis. That's his business. That's how he runs his program. But we're talking about facts. Facts when he says dut, 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 and it's contradicted by reality. And I'd assume that people are telling him. One of the things that Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting does is they do that. Accuracy is part of it, not just fairness, accuracy. And there has never been one of these guys that's going to say, I made a mistake. Yeah, I gave you bad information. You know, I've said that. About 10 of 11 Democrats voting against the war resolution. I can't begin to tell you how many times. And it takes a first-time listener. What were you thinking? Oh, I don't want to upset Pete and tell him how wrong he is. I want to know when I've made a mistake, so please tell me. Now, this video, Outfoxed. You go to outfoxed.org. It's Rupert Murdoch's War on Journalism. It's astounding what is in this. Now, If you've been listening to the show, I refer to Fox News as Foxhole News because of its cheerleading for the war against Iraq. They were just delighted, both because they knew that it would give them good ratings, but also because they're ideologically committed to being a propaganda arm of the Republican Party and conservative ideology. It's not really a news outlet. Like, I report the news here, but this isn't a news outlet. It's an opinion outlet. And I wonder, what do they have these slogans like America's Newsroom, Fair and Balanced, and We Report, You Decide? I just wonder, those of you who watch that, whether you agree. Do you really think it's fair and balanced? I mean, nobody listening to me thinks I'm fair and balanced. Well, I'm kind of fair, but I'm not balanced. I have a particular point of view, and I don't even give the other point of view because that's on the air 99.9% of the time. Why should I even do it? Also, it's not a news show. It's for you and me to give our opinions, to call 313-298-WRIF, for instance. But they, on Fox, are presenting this illusion that somehow they are fair and balanced, that they're not far-right wingers. I mean, it's astounding to me. You see this all presented in this OutFox video and see some of the revelations. Listen to some of the ex-Fox News employees. For one thing, they get a little memo every day essentially telling them what to report. Walter Cronkite is in there, and he says he's never heard of this in any news outlet ever. This is absolutely unheard of. And somewhere along the line, actually I think it's Jeff Cohen, who is the founder of FAIR, Detroiter, an old friend of mine, said the most damning indictment of Fox News is coming from this study that was done by an independent polling organization of heavy Fox News viewers, people that watch Fox News a lot. It's inversely proportional. The more they watch Fox News, the less correct information they have. The more they watch Fox News, the more they're wrong about facts. Not opinions, but facts. You know, you can't argue about facts. I mean, you can interpret them and what have you. Now, to me, I'm not that shocked. I'm shocked that any of you watch it, unless what you really want is just to be massaged by the right wing and kind of have your already held views affirmed. Remember that thing about, where did that even start? They had a big section on this in the film about John Kerry looking French. And then they showed a memo that they had gotten. This isn't supposed to be for public. They got it in some way or other. It said, John Kerry's French appearance, what does looking French look like? I don't even know. I mean, I know some French people. They don't look French. They look European. You know, they're Euro-American. Anyway. So then they just cut to one Fox news whore after the next saying, Kerry looks French. Does he look French? French, French, French. I mean, it's just. And the whole function of Fox News is not to give you facts or news or information or allow you to think critically. Rather, it is to create a specific impression. Now, that's a general failing of television and may even have to some extent with radio, but it is really, really pronounced in television, because television is the official medium through which the ruling ideas get transmitted about everything, about politics, about culture, you know, what have you. And when any of these news shows open up, whether it's Fox News or something that's little decent, not really, not worth watching, like ABC News, it has the trappings of officialdom. It's not like a guy like me who's just out yakking and giving his opinion. You know that my opinion is no more valid than yours. You know that I don't necessarily deserve any more credibility than the guy next door or the person you work with. And that's good. That's excellent. Because you're thinking critically. You're not being lulled to sleep by the trappings of official communication. Guys up there in $1,500 suits with all this electronics in back of them. And so when they say it's America's newsroom, this says this is reality, even though it's a medium. You know, bunches of them are media. So television particularly does not allow you to think critically. So when you even reading sometimes is tough. But where was I with that one thing? Remember when you just go over things real quickly? I mean, I tend to do that. I mean, you're reading. I mean, just for instance, where was that thing about? Well, just the word militants in there a lot. You go right over that, and that begins to then stick in your mind. It's our United States soldiers, our friends, our family, our neighbors, our community members are there fighting militants. And yet, if you begin to read it, if you think about it, and understand the origins of this unnecessary war, and what the United States soldiers are subjected to, and what they're asked to do, what they're doing, and what they suffer, and what the people that their actions suffer, well, then you can sit there and look. That's why I think it is absolutely worthless to listen to television news if you want to know what's going on. I mean, you know, maybe you can just say, well, let me just get a real quick hit of what's going on. But it is the vehicle for allowing power to exercise itself without challenge, ultimately. I mean, sometimes they'll say, well, we need to fix this little detail or that little detail. I mean, obviously, Foxhole News, they've got one goal, get George W. Bush reelected. Get George W. Bush elected. He never was elected, really. He lost, and then he was selected by his father's friends on the Supreme Court. So, and I think I've said this before, I'm in the business of finding out about stuff. I got to learn stuff so I can give a reasonable presentation when I do this program. If I thought television was a worthy medium to find out stuff, to get opinions, to get information where I couldn't find anywhere else and what have you, I'd watch it all the time. I'd say, I hate watching this thing. I hate watching these guys in suits give this news and this chopped up, fast-paced cutting and editing and all the crawlers beneath it and all that. I'd watch it all the time because I'd say, boy, this is good. I'm learning lots of stuff. I would say I learned zero. It's a waste of time. That's a waste of time for you, I think. You know, hey, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to, I'm doing what I think other people are doing. All right, that's my opinion. You give me yours. I'm Peter Werbe. I'm the host of Night Call. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. Call talkyes at yahoo.com is our email address. And let's take our first caller. Hi, it's Peter Werbe. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning, or whatever it is.
Yeah, whatever it is. Hey, I don't know if you've already talked about Kerry, but I don't... I mean, I know you have, but I don't know what the whole thing is with the Cambodia thing. Do you know what that's all about?
You know, I tell you, I haven't followed that much. If for no other reason, it's not very important. Like George W. Bush is accused of going AWOL or even deserting his unit and getting in to the Air National Guard simply because his father was rich and able to skip him over a lot of people. I mean, to me, it shows some hypocrisy, but that's not very important. And what Kerry did or didn't do in Vietnam, I mean, if he did make anything up, but most of this has just been funded by and instigated by Republicans, and particularly funded by. But what we miss is any talk about policy. I mean, ultimately, do you care whether George W. Bush scammed out of the draft like most rich guys did? I mean, how many rich guys served in Vietnam and got killed and got Agent Oranged and all that? Very, very few. Most of them, you can see the whole Republican, pantheon, just they were able to scam out of the draft. I don't know why the Democrats couldn't. Most of them served. But anyway, and the same thing with something like Kerry. I haven't even, to tell you the truth, even investigated to the extent where I think the charges against him are true or not. It just doesn't make any difference to me. And ultimately, it doesn't make much difference to me whether Bush scammed out of the draft and was AWOL or not. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I don't think it doesn't matter if it's a scam or not, because I think it's more the fact that Kerry lied or tell the truth.
Well, what about whether Bush lied or told the truth?
I mean, because if you said he was in Cambodia in such and such a year, and they said they weren't even in Cambodia.
Well, Bush says he was in the Air National Guard, and there's no record of him serving there. So that would seem that that would be a lie, too.
Right? Lie, wouldn't it now?
What?
So that would be a bold-faced lie then, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So, but would you vote or not vote for George W. Bush if you found out he was lying?
I don't support there. I don't support a president that lies. I don't support a candidate that lies either.
Well, what if you found out that both of them were lying? What would you do?
Well, then I would have to go to whynotvote.com and see who I would vote for most.
Whynotvote.com.
That is a great website. It says who to vote for. Like, it says what the policies are. Then you can vote what your policies are, and then you click on what your policies are, and then it'll pop up what candidate that you would most likely vote for.
Huh. Well, that's interesting. Well, let me just repeat again. What's getting lost in all of this, and I particularly hear on a lot of conservative websites and some of these real scurrilous ones, are all these issues about how people look and whether what they did 35, 40 years ago and how they're posing themselves. And obviously, both candidates are posing themselves as these military figures for in hopes that military families will support them. And it doesn't speak to the issues. The issues are the war in Iraq. The issues are the economy. The issues are who dropped the ball on September 11th and who is using or not using terrorism for political purposes. And the rest of this stuff is a bunch of crap, to put it quite indelicately. All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate you bringing it up. Anybody else with comments about that? Like to hear from you. But I don't know. I mean, I don't even think it's important. I mean, this then is what occupies our minds. Well, how did this get raised to a national issue? Well, again, by Foxhole News, by Republican-funded groups, and that's really exciting. It's really been on a lot of news programs and talk shows. Now, what if I said what I want to do was talk about this article in Saturday's New York Times that says, out of spotlight, Bush overhauls nation's regulations, often suiting industry. Well, I go, and if this was a talk station, the program director would say to me, are you out of your mind? You got to go with the Kerry thing. Of course, you know, they never went with the Bush thing about, you can go to AWOL.com, by the way, and look for the Bush thing. What's happening is Bush Incorporated, which is an unabashed racket rather than a government to assist the wealthy and the corporations, they've taken all these regulations, these regulatory actions that don't even have to go through Congress, and carrying them all out to benefit big business to the detriment of consumers, workers, patients, what have you. Let me just give you an idea real quickly. They want to ease requirements for replacing wetlands affected by development or mining. In other words, when these companies destroy wetlands, they have to replace it. They want to get rid of that. They proposed making it easier for mining companies to dump dirt and rubble into rivers and streams. Oh, I know, this isn't quite as much fun as talking about whether John Kerry was actually in Cambodia or not. How about this? Coal dust standards. They've just increased the allowable level of coal dust in mines. They've increased the allowable amount of coal dust in mines. That means that thousands of miners are going to be facing black lung disease because the people paying the salary of George W. Bush or contributing to the Republican Party are these mine owners, these energy companies that couldn't care less about the dog meat that they send down into the mine shafts. That's human beings. That's the neighbors of people living in West Virginia and what have you. To them, to these rich guys in the boardrooms and the Cheneys and Bushes, all these wealthy guys, they're nothing. They're expendable. They're little ciphers that they're going to have to pay off for a little black lung disease. But if you get rid of all this, that it allows them more profits. I mean, this is like Murder Incorporated almost. Same thing. I didn't mention this last week. In fact, I had that on an interview. Bush sends over. Well, a minute. Let me stay with the mining thing. The head of the mine company lobbyists proposed that these regulations about coal dust in mines be lessened or revoked during the Clinton era. They threw them out. They said, we wouldn't consider doing that. We're not going to harm human beings, workers in a critical industry. We're not going to allow people to suck more coal dust into their lungs. That man is now head of mine safety under the Bush administration. Talk about letting the fox guard the chicken coop. That's exactly what's happening. Same thing. A representative from the Bush administration goes over to the Bangkok AIDS conference. His main goal is stop generic antiretroviral drugs from being available to the millions, tens of millions of people suffering from HIV. So Bush condemns millions to death. And this just goes on and on. Increased hours that truckers can drive on duty, you know, not regulated on the federal highways, which means more guys are going to fall asleep and there's going to be more accidents. Reducing training requirements for workers who feed nursing home patients. Revoked a determination that mercury emissions are hazardous. I mean, all these corporate polluters and industry guys just walk in there and say, hey, we want to get rid of these regulations. They're costing us too much money. Bush said, sure. They've abandoned a Clinton-era rule that put nearly 60 million acres of national forest largely off limits to new roads for logging, so they want to clear-cut our natural heritage, the natural heritage of the planet. That's not exciting, though. We got to talk about whether Kerry looks French or not. Let's take another call here. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, it's Peter Werby. Welcome.
Hi. I had a question for you about the elections coming up with
sure.
Bush and Kerry. For the fringe voters that are out there, what does Bush or Kerry have to do to win their votes?
I'm just yakking. What do you think? Or do you want me, or is it just a question you don't know the answer to?
Well, no, I think if Bush comes out and says, if he says, okay, we went over to Iraq to get out an evil dictator who is killing millions of people over there in Iraq, and then he says we've made some mistakes, obviously, and we're correcting those mistakes, then Bush wins.
Well, I mean, that's essentially what he's been saying. I mean, they changed the reason that we went over there. Remember, we were going over there because we were in imminent danger of a strike by Saddam Hussein. He was developing nuclear weapons and all that. Kerry ought to take him on directly. Kerry must be managed by idiots. The Democrats are perfectly capable of losing election. That they should be able to win easily. They asked John Kerry, would you have voted for the war resolution had you known that the information about weapons of mass destruction was false? And he said, yes. Now, what's the matter with this guy? I mean, who in the world would have voted for a war resolution based on false information? But he wants to look military, you know, he wants to give this military appearance. He wants to look like he's tough, like he's strong. I mean, that's why he went in with all this crap reporting for duty and all that. Now, only about 6 or 8% of the potential voters are undecided. Great numbers of them come from military homes. So much of what we see, the $500 million that's going to be spent or so on the electioneering, is aimed at this extraordinarily small number of people. I mean, I don't know anybody that hasn't made up their mind. I mean, anybody that says, well, I don't know, Kerry, Bush, I mean, it's kind of weird, but there is a small number of people. So all of this money is going to be just aimed at a small number of people. Kerry should go on the offensive. He should denounce Bush as a liar. He should say that this was an engineered war long in the planning by these conservative chicken hawks. I mean, he should be quoting stuff like this. Saddam Hussein gave up all of Iraq's weapons of mass destruction in the wake of the 1991 Gulf War. The scientist who headed his nuclear program, Jafar Dia Jafar, said in a BBC interview. He said there was no capability. There were no chemical or biological or any what are called weapons of mass destruction. He said that he ran Saddam's nuclear program for 25 years. He said there was no development of chemical, biological, or nuclear weapons at any time after 1991. on U.S. and British claims prior to March 2003 invasion that Saddam had restarted Iraq's nuclear program. Jaffer said with a laugh, "My reaction? I knew they were lying to their people." That was my reaction, and that's what should come out of the mouth of Kerry.
Hometown people, hometown news, from a local point of view. So hey, what's going on?
With a wide variety of classified ads featured each week in the Observer and Eccentric newspapers, you can be sure that your search for that perfect something will unfold. And when placing a classified automotive ad in the Observer and Eccentric newspapers, your ad will unfold to 500,000 readers weekly. We're flexible and we're cost-effective. The Observer and Eccentric Automotive Classifieds, where the real deals unfold. To place an ad, call 1-866-818-SOLD or visit hometownlife.com.
We're keeping you connected, the Observer and Eccentric, where our hometown stories unfold.
The Observer and Eccentric Classifieds, run your classified ad for 2 weeks to sell your auto, boat, or motorcycle for only $40. Four-line minimum, $250 each additional line. Private owners only. Call 1-866-818-SOLD or visit hometownlife.com.
Hello, baby. This is the king. The king of car shopping, that is. But it ain't too tough to be the king when you're rocking with Dick Scott Kia in Canton and Dick Scott Kia of Waterford, baby. With a job on $199, man, even you could be approved for a brand new car.
Do you have a job? Do you have $199? Dick Scott Kia in Canton and Dick Scott Kia of Waterford can get you approved for a brand new Kia Rio. Starting at just $7,899. Plus, every new Kia is backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty. Do you have a job?
I'm the king, baby.
Do you have $199?
Well, I've got a gig at the VFW Thursday night. Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Make every mile count only at Dick Scott Kia. Michigan Avenue, a quarter mile west of I-275 in Canton. And Dick Scott Kia of Waterford. At the Summit Place Mall on Elizabeth Lake Road, just west of Telegraph. Call 866-6KIA now. That's 866-6KIA-NOW.
To qualified buyers plus tax, title, and plate fees, all rebates to dealer.
Your opinion matters. Call 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call and more of your calls coming up. This is the RIS award-winning Night Call with Peter Werby. You can call in at 313-298-WRIF. Peter will return with more of your calls in just a moment.
This is another Riff Rock concert.
It was the best of times.
One small step for man.
It was the worst of times.
Like it or not, we live in times of danger and uncertainty.
It was the time of the Doors.
It is time again. The concert that wasn't supposed to happen. The 21st Century Tour. The Doors of the 21st Century. Live.
Come on.
Saturday, August 21st at DTE Energy Music Theater. Ray Manzarek, Robbie Krieger, Ian Asner. The Doors of the 21st Century.
History in the making.
The tour they said was impossible. Don't wait. Tickets are on sale now. CC.com, ThePalaceNet.com, The Palace of DTE Energy Music Theater Box Offices. All Ticketmaster locations are charged at 248-645-6666. The Doors of the 21st Century. Brought to you by Miller Genuine Draft.
Getting ready to talk to your daughter about underage drinking? Then make sure you avoid the following communication violations.
Hey, Carrie, let's you and I go get our belly buttons pierced. What do you say?
Trying to be cool. For more effective communication, just be yourself.
Carrie, honey, we need to talk about global warming.
Straying from the subject at hand, just be open, honest, and direct. She'll appreciate it.
Now it's time for some role-playing. Granddad's going to play the part of your friend Jessica.
Let's go shopping for lip gloss.
Turning the conversation into a major production. For more effective communication, keep it simple. Want more tips? Then check out the free Family Talk About Drinking Guide. Just call 1-800-359-TALK or visit FamilyTalkOnline.com. We all make a difference. Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
My name is Nick Bristow, and I think outside the bun.
Nick Bristow thinks outside the bun.
I can't live chained to one measly state. I was born to roam.
Nick sold everything he owned that didn't fit into his car.
Now I'm prepared to go whenever the urge strikes me. Like last night, I went to the kitchen for a glass of water and ended up moving to Minnesota.
Nick is always on the go. That's why he enjoys Taco Bell's chicken quesadilla. It's filled with new grilled and marinated all-white meat chicken, a blend of cheeses, and then sealed in a flour tortilla. It's a quesadilla that's as ready to move as you are.
I feel the need to explore coursing through my veins.
Keep on trucking, Nick. Road warriors stay on the go with Taco Bell's chicken quesadilla because they think outside the bun. At participating locations, white meat chicken available in U.S. only.
Craving a taste for late-night excitement? Taco Bell is open late so you can feed your need for all the spicy, melty, crunchy stuff you crave. Spice up the night. Think outside the bun. Open till 2 a.m. or later. Hours may vary by location.
One Michael Army Center, the ultimate recreational superstore.
Hi, Christine Michael here for Walt Michaels RV Superstores. What do camping, tailgating, NASCAR, and the Ryder Cup have in common? They're all great things to do in a Walt Michaels RV. So whether you want to rent an RV or buy a new or used one, Walt Michaels is the place to go. With over 45 acres of luxury motorhomes, travel trailers, fifth wheels, pop-ups, and truck campers, we're sure you'll find an RV that will enhance your camping, tailgating, racing, and Ryder Cup experience. Come see us. We're Michigan's largest RV dealer, and we're sure to have the RV you're looking for. We're on the North I-94 Service Drive in Belleville, also known as the Walt Michaels RV Mile. Or call us at 800-697-2500. We have an RV for everyone's budget and lifestyle. We'll be looking for you.
Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Now, more of your comments, questions, and opinions with your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much. Welcome back, everybody. And Dan Letarski is our phone screener and producer tonight. Is Jay here? Okay, and Jay Hudson, too. Dan, all sunburned from being out in the parking lot of the Silver Dome. The Warped Tour was out there. He said it was great. And most of the bands are telling people to get registered and vote Bush out. Same with Ozfest. Same with this big tour going on with Bruce Springsteen and John Mellencamp and the Dixie Chicks. And who else is in it? Tons of people. Actually, you can go to my website, peterwerby.com, W-E-R-B-E, peterwerby.com, and just see the amazing array of all of our rock artists across the board, whether you're talking punk or rock or classic or modern rock or what have you. The people we love that make our life wonderful. As you hear, I hear on WRIF, want Bush out. Let's see. Robert writes in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. There's a couple that don't, but Robert writes in from Port Huron, says, ever since Hurricane Charley struck, old King George immediately declared the Gulf Coast of Florida a federal disaster area. But he should have done that. Do you suppose he did this because he is trailing John Kerry in the polls in the state of Florida by 7%? Right now, Bush is not going to do anything. He's not even being the president. I mean, he's a candidate for election, not re-election. In fact, who was it that asked, what was the popular vote here? Can you give a shout-out to Jen from Jim saying, I love you? Is this what we're going to start doing? Your show is great, and I love it, but Jen says, what was the popular vote from the last election? I don't remember the total figures, but Bush lost the popular election about half a million people. And that's only because he posed himself as a moderate. Remember that? He was going all this crap about, I'm not a divider, I'm a uniter and all that. I mean, people would have known all of this. If he would have said, look, I'm going to roll back the designation of mercury as hazardous, or I'm going to allow arsenic in the water, I'm going to start a war, I'm going to, on and on. I mean, nobody would have even voted for him. But let's see, where did, there was something in here that I wanted to talk, the top evangelicals still await the Republican invitation to the convention that's going to be happening at the end of the month. And what's happening is that these right-wingers are not going to be at the convention. You're going to see African Americans, who make up about 1% of the Republican Party, very prominent. You're going to see all these moderates talking, people that support abortion, that support gay rights, people like Schwarzenegger and Giuliani and people like that, that are so far out of the mainstream of the Republican Party, because the Republican Party now is a far right-wing wacko organization that's seize power in this country. All right, let's go to our phones. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, it's Night Call. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, Peter.
Hi.
Hey, how you doing? I was just going to comment that it's understandable that you made an error when it comes to Michigan's congressional delegation. It, currently, it is 9-6 Republican, but up until 2002, it was a flip-flop. And the only reason it flip-flopped, it was because Republicans in the State House and Republicans in the State Senate and John Engler gerrymandered the districts to take what is a Democratic state and have it controlled by Republicans in the congressional delegation.
Well, let's remind people, too, what gerrymandering means. It means twisting these districts in odd shapes to ensure that Republicans will get elected.
Absolutely. Right. There's a lot of places where they're shaped in such a way that people who would otherwise should have been represented by Democrats are not.
Yeah, yeah.
So I understand your error, and it's because it wasn't that long ago that it was a complete Democratic delegation majority. So.
By the way, here is someone just gave me the popular vote, or maybe Dan got it off. Dan got it off the internet. Bush got about 50,500,000. Gore got about 51 million. And if you add to that the Nader vote, which was almost 3 million, Bush even looks worse. I mean, the majority of people in this country did not want George W. Bush as president. All right, thank you very much. Ed from Warren writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. If Bush loses the election to Kerry in November, then who would run on the Republican ticket in 2008? Well, who do you think? Jeb Bush. I forgot about that. When I was talking about his, caller wrote in and said, did he think that Bush's appearance in Florida was political? Every single thing he does will be political. I mean, he doesn't have much of a record in terms of legislation or anything. But get this. A lot of people have been critical, and I don't know whether this is deserved or not, but critical of Governor Bush of Florida for not getting the seniors evacuated in time. And they got hurt pretty badly, a number of them. Like I say, I don't know enough of the details here. But here's Bush explaining himself. You can't plan for the unforeseen. Well, whatever. That's what he said. He spent much of the day with storm victims in Charlotte County. Now, get this. Get this. God doesn't follow the linear directions of computer models. And these are powerful storms that don't behave in any kind of way that you can say with certainty what they're going to do. God doesn't follow the linear directions of computer models. Does Governor Jeb Bush think that God sicked this hurricane on the people of Florida, the retirees, the elders of our country? I mean, these people are a pack of wacks. You know, like in Wacko, not W-A-X. I mean, they really, he really thinks that God unleashes hurricanes? We got to be rid of these people. The sooner the better. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Yeah, hi, Peter. I'd like to say enjoy the show.
Thanks.
I wanted to make a comment about, you were talking about earlier, about the media in this country, the news media.
Sure.
I'd like to agree with you on that for sure. I think that you can't really believe what you hear on the news media here. I mean, especially like CNN or Fox News Channel. I mean, it definitely seems to have an agenda to it. It's not non-biased at all. And unfortunately, I think a lot of people in this country believe everything they hear on TV, you know, and it doesn't bode well, I think, in, you know, as far as being an educated voter. You really need to have as much information as you can to be able to make an educated vote, you know.
It is. I mean, what do you think about what I was saying about television, that it's a poor source for information because it doesn't really allow you to reflect?
No, not at all. And they only give you kind of quick flashes of things. They don't let you, it's not like they want you to think about what they're saying. They don't, you know, they're not there to let you digest what they're saying. They're just putting out what they want you to see or what they want you to, you know, what they want you to think.
Sure. And like I said, the main function is to create an impression. And I don't know, I don't know how successful they are. I don't know. No regular Fox viewers have called up to say that they think it's a wonderful source of information. But thank you for your opinion.
Oh, thank you for letting me have it.
Sure. That's what we're here for. Thank you. Tony Z. Oop, I didn't mean to give your last name. I hope I didn't give anything away. Tony from Farmington Hills writes in, Peter, I, like many, watch Fox News on Sunday morning to see Kieran, what's her name here? I don't know. Kieran, I never have seen her. Don't know who this is. Never saw the name before. So excuse me if I'm pronouncing it incorrectly. Kieran Chitry's legs. Legs? How do you see a news commentator's legs? Oh, and some of them, they sit around in chairs. Yeah, I saw that on the Outfoxed video. We were talking about that. Check that out. Outfoxed, Rupert Murdoch's War on Journalism, outfoxed.org. ED in the end, you know. And ever notice how they always have the short skirts and legs out there? Didn't Paula Zahn have a problem with this? Then she was gone? I don't know. But I remember my old on-air partner, Jolene Jordan. We used to look at these newscasters on Fox, and we'd say, you know, they look like porn stars. You're wondering, what do I know about porn stars? She said that. And anyways, Fox definitely uses sex to sell. And, you know, they do all look like babes. And heavily made up, real, what did, you know, and Three Stooges, Curly, you say, society dames. All right, that they, but not even that. I mean, it's not just, they don't look wealthy. I don't watch it that much. You tell me. 313-298-WRIF. All right, it's Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening.
Going on, Peter. How you doing, bud?
Good.
Hey, I just want to say that I don't think a lot of your callers are being intellectually honest about the TV, and I don't really think you are either, even though I really like your show.
How come? What do you mean?
To be honest with you, I have about four different people that I watch consistently that I think are very honest, and not, I mean, not, you know, not that they're not have a view, but that are pretty fair all around. I would say that, like, Tim Russert, Ted Koppel, Chris Matthews, and Bill O'Reilly, I think all four of those guys are honestly good journalists.
Well, I'll tell you, I do not, I watch television so rarely, I cannot comment on them. The only person I've seen of any amount is Ted Koppel. And he certainly does have his good moments. I think Bill O'Reilly, I mean, Bill O'Reilly is on the cover of Al Franken's books of Lies and the Lying Liars That Tell Them. I mean, Bill O'Reilly lets off such a stream of BS. I mean, this is all what I read and what I've seen and what's on this video. They had these little clips from O'Reilly that were astounding on what a overbearing bully he is. I mean, one thing he says, he never tells people to shut up. And then they had this this montage of him telling people to shut up. He said, I've told people to shut up once in 6 years. And then you hear him going, shut up, just shut up, turn his mic off, shut up.
And I've watched a lot of him.
Yeah.
And a lot of times when he says shut up, it's usually he has someone on that's kind of just going nuts.
Well, the only person I ever have seen, and like I say, I've seen very few clips, is him. And like I saw him, a long clip of him, of Michael Moore, and he was actually fairly calm. Michael Moore said, look, I'm not going to get on there and have you turn off my mic and talk over me. But he barely let Moore finish his sentences. And what you really have to say to people, I didn't think Moore did that well up against him, because, I mean, he is this overbearing character. You have to tell people like that to shut up. I've been on, like, television shows where I've just had to say, look, will you shut up? And I said that. And let me finish and stop cutting me off, because I can't make myself understood. And, I mean, the clips that were in this Outfoxed thing were just outrageous. The lies he said about people, the misrepresentation he made of other people, and the idea that he would pose himself as an independent when he really is a far right-wing Republican. Okay. Didn't want to hear my opinion. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Good evening. How you doing?
Good.
Yeah, you're right. We really do have to get these people out of office.
Okay.
Hopefully out of office and into prison.
Well,
I'd really like to see indictments start flying.
George W. Bush is simply defeated in November. I will be disappointed. I think that there's enough impeachable offenses, beginning with
Valerie Plame, the CIA agent. Jesus.
That's the small stuff. I mean, misfeasance for allowing September 11th to occur, the purposeful misrepresentation, in other words, lies.
Cowardice in the face of the enemy.
Yeah.
I'll flip open the cover of my pet goat.
Well, I hate to break this to you, but Michael Moore was mistaken. Remember I was talking about wanting to correct errors. The name of that book is not My Pet Goat. So here's an egregious Michael Moore error. I have to. You ready for this? This might destroy your whole confidence in him. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. It's The Pet Goat.
The Pet Goat.
Yeah, Michael was wrong.
The Pet Goat.
We can't trust this guy anymore.
But still, you know, looking at that vacant deer in the headlight look, it's just scary.
Yeah,
this is a man who has no idea how to act when he's challenged.
Are people still going to see Fahrenheit 9/11? Do you know?
Yeah.
I
just went and saw it again last week.
Really? Well, how many people were in the theater?
About 20.
So
it was midday, so having 20 people in there midday is pretty good, actually.
Yeah. It's not going to be shown in Kuwait. The Kuwaitis have banned it. Yeah, because they said it's an insult to the Saudi rulers.
Yeah, well, you don't want to insult the Saudi rulers. I mean,
you don't
help them get out of the country instead of being questioned by the FBI.
You got it. All right, I got to take a break. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Peter will be back right after this.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. Hey, it's late night. You're sitting there, and you're thinking about your mortgage. Well, you can go to rockfinancial.com right now. That's right. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you can go to rockfinancial.com. And there's a lot of reasons to visit. Find out how you can get a $200,000 loan for a lower payment than you would ever think. Also, find out about the Smart Arm. Maybe you're not going to be in your house that long, and you've got to take a look. If you're like most Americans, you might have $7,500 or more in credit card debt. Might be time to use the mortgage and consolidate that debt. No reason to have outstanding bad debt like credit card debt when you can have good debt, low interest, and tax deductible. Use your mortgage. Go to rockfinancial.com right now. You can check out the mortgage calculators. See how much home you can afford if you're thinking about a new purchase. A lot of reasons to go. So go right now, rockfinancial.com. Even though it's late, you go to rockfinancial.com. Anytime, anywhere. Evenings or weekends, you can go to rockfinancial.com, Michigan's largest mortgage company, rockfinancial.com.
Rock Financial is a Quicken Loans company, an equal housing lender. Details at rockfinancial.com.
Men, how do you like to last even longer in the bedroom? Now you can with Maxtral, the new climax control system for men. Maxtral lets you last longer than you ever thought possible, so you can prolong the pleasure and maximize the control. Maxtral is scientifically formulated to give you the kind of stamina you want and a woman never forgets. Maxtral is for men of all ages. It's available without a prescription, and it can give you more satisfaction than ever before. Now you can make the pleasure go on and on with Maxtral, maximum control for men. Ask your doctor about Maxtral or call now and try Maxtral free for 30 days. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580. You pay only shipping and handling. Call now, have your credit card handy, and try Maxtral free for 30 days. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580.
We've been saying it since 1974, and it's still true today. Tom Holzer Ford in Farmington Hills is the no-problem dealer. We make sure that your car buying experience is just that, no problem. With our experienced staff and terrific selection, Tom Holzer can put you in the new Ford you've been looking for. The right car, the right price, no problem.
It's the no-problem dealer.
Right now, AZ and D-Plan lessees can drive a new 2004 F-150 Supercab four-wheel drive for just $177 a month, with only $177 due at signing on a 24-month, 24,000-mile red carpet renewal lease. Tax, title, and license extra. Hurry, offer ends August 31st. Call 888-258-1386. That's 888-258-1386 to find out more.
No,
at 10 Mile of Haggerty in Farmington Hills. Also visit HolzerFord.com.
More Night Call with Peter Werby next on The Rim.
The
the Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like Snooker's Pool and Pub with 5 convenient locations in Metro Detroit. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's, home of the original square pizza since 1946. Visit the historical 6 Mile and Conant location today.
Log on today and save
with the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
Hello, Albany! How's everyone feeling tonight? All right! Are you ready to rock?
I think so.
You mean sway back and forth?
I can't hear you! Are you ready to rock?
Rock is a little strong. I am ready to enjoy myself.
Cause once we get going, we are not gonna stop. So you better be ready to go all night!
All night?
I need my 8 hours. Yeah, me too.
Rock without enthusiasm. That's like beer without taste. So this summer, celebrate 50 years of great rock by choosing the beer with more flavor than Budweiser. Miller Genuine Draft. Genuine flavor, cold, filtered, smooth. Miller, good call.
In a nationwide taste test, even Budweiser drinkers said Miller Genuine Draft had more flavor. Testing conducted by the Institute of Perception, Richmond, Virginia. Results reflect which beer has more flavor, not preference or smoothness. Taste for yourself. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Live responsibly.
101 WRIF Detroit. Call in with your comments at 313-298-WRIF. Now, Night Call returns. Here's Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. Thanks for joining me. Thanks for your patience if you're online. On the line, rather. And 1 o'clock, we'll be featuring an interview with investigative reporter Greg Palast. You can go to Greg Palast. That's P-A-L-A-S-T. P-A-L-A-S-T.com. Get an idea ahead of time what he's talking about. Hey, what a surprise. Fully one-third of Bush's tax cuts in the last 3 years have gone to people with the top 1% of the income. And these are people that earned an average of $1.2 million annually, according to a report by the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office published Friday. The report calculated that households with incomes in the top 1% have been receiving an average tax cut of $78,500 this year, while households in the middle 20% of earnings, averaging about $57,000 a year, were getting a tax cut of only $1,000. You think, well, $1,000, what the hell, that's not bad. $20 a week, well, you don't even really notice it too much in your check, but, you know, it's there. But the New York Times says the new estimates confirm what independent tax analysts have long said, that Bush's tax cuts have been heavily skewed to the very wealthiest taxpayers. Now, why would they do that? I mean, why would they take a third of this extraordinary sum and give it to people who don't need it? I mean, does somebody who makes $1.2 million need another $79,000 a year more as compared to people that are making $57,000 and maybe could get a $3,000 or $4,000 a year tax cut that would really have an impact on their lives and on their consumption that might do something for the economy? The cuts were tilted so much in favor of the wealthy that they provided relatively little stimulus to the economy and set the stage for record budget deficit. Since 2001, the federal budget has deteriorated from a surplus of more than $100 billion to a deficit expected to exceed $400 billion in 2004. So Bush has blown $500 billion. And there are people out there that say, Four more years? I mean, what planet do these people live on? And these aren't wealthy people. These are these dim bulbs that think somehow that these rich guys actually care about them and have something in common with them and will at work to protect them and their standard of living. I mean, how can people be that foolish? I don't get it. Yeah, let's go back to our phones. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Yes, hello, sir. I don't know if I'm going to shoot your buttons, but I'm going to read the front page of the Detroit News and Free Press this morning.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, don't read too much of it.
Shootings in Detroit soar in 04. More than 800 people have been gunned down, police upheaval, employment blamed. And what I'm going to ask you is, I'm curious about your comments. I want to hear your comments on that very quickly, and I would love to make some comments as a rebuttal, but I think that, like, when you
What do you mean, rebuttal? Why are you going to rebut when
I'm not going to rebuttal you. I'll probably agree with you, but,
okay.
Like, what do you think of that? Shootings in Detroit soaring, 800 shootings?
That's awful.
More than 800 people were shot in Detroit?
Yeah, yeah. So
for 6 months?
What do you make of that?
A 70% jump in gun violence.
What do you make of that?
Well, I don't get it. I think it's unemployment. I think that Los Angeles gets himself out. Chicago's getting out. Pittsburgh is. Cleveland. Detroit is still over 20%.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear these things about, well, we're like low and under 10, you know, like baloney. There's a 20% unemployment rate in this city.
Sure. That is.
And,
yeah, a desperate people become angry people, and it's taken out on one another. The people closest around them. I mean, it's another result of the disaster that Bush has created in the economy.
And that's why I'm for hardcore, systematic gun control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you talk to most decent cops, not like bad cops. You know, but hello, what happened up in Sterling Heights?
Yeah.
Same thing. You know, somebody shot a cop up there. Guns are prevalent. We need hardcore, systematic gun control in the city, and you'll probably get 1,000 calls. In the adverse, you know, Uncle Ted's going to call and say, oh, he needs his Second Amendment rights. You know, it makes me sick when I see what I see going on.
There was this psycho right-winger on a small Detroit talk station that actually just became kind of a psycho. I remember when some of these shootings came down, he said, we've got to arm everybody in Detroit. And I'm thinking, isn't this part of the problem? Well, you know, the arguments against gun control are that in several countries, for instance, where, like in Switzerland, where every male between, I don't know, you say like 21 and 50, I don't know if that's the age, are required to have an assault weapon in their house as part of the militia or something like that. And they have a very, very low crime rate. So what's going on in this country, of course, it still has this catastrophically high level of violence on every level, everything from gun violence to violence against children and women, is that it's a society that has a streak of anger, and it's so deep, and it's not quite clear what it's all about. I mean, some of the angriest people, you wonder, what the hell are they even so angry about? They've got it the best. On the other hand, when you get down to the low end of things, these are people that are angry about the despair that they face, that the impossibility of improving their circumstances because of the way that the economy is skewed and the way that racism still exists. So, gun control, I don't think you're going to find much sympathy among any politician. There's nobody. I mean, I haven't heard you get some of these nitwits that are saying, Kerry's going to take our guns away. I mean, fortunately, I haven't heard anything about that, and there's nothing in the Democratic platform about that, I mean, which you would find unfortunate. The main thing to solve is the anger in this country, the rage that particularly so many men express. And, I mean, it's everything, rage, depression, and all of that, the fears that are engendered from the top purposely to manipulate the American population by the people in power. But I share your concern, and I thank you for your call. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. Hi, it's WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Well, I wasn't going to talk about guns, but I was just listening to Bob Baer from Alabama, the Republican, and he's with the NRA, and he's for Kerry, so.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Get the NRA behind Kerry, that's great. Nobody likes Bush anymore.
Well, wait a minute. I think the NRA is going to back Bush.
I don't think so.
Really?
I don't think so. They don't. A lot of them don't like the fact that he wants all these immigrants coming in from Mexico.
Well,
let me ask you a question. This Goss that he wants to put in charge of the CIA,
yeah.
Is he part of Bush's religious sect?
He is part of his political sect, which means that the office has become politicized. So the next time that they need a finding again, that they need a rationale for a war, they'll have the guy in there that'll say, sure. Yeah, well.
Well, I don't think it's just the the right wing conservatives, like McCain. I don't know what he has on McCain. Anyways. But,
I don't know if he has anything, but go ahead.
You know, they have all these 9/11 commissions going on, and, you know, they're sitting around talking. And then the governor from New Jersey puts his bimbo lover in charge of Homeland Security. Where's the congressional oversight for that?
Well, you know, that's funny. The we should just remind people that the governor of New Jersey has resigned, saying he had an inappropriate affair with a man, and he said that he's a gay American. And this guy who was, was trying to jack him up for millions of dollars to stay quiet. Now, it's not clear. There may just be some corruption there. I'm not sure of it all. But one thing that's interesting is that New Jersey Governor James McCreevy's approval rating has not suffered. In fact, it's gone up 2% since he announced he was going to resign.
Now, how stupid are the people from New Jersey? Because this guy didn't even have clearance or anything from the FBI, well, supposedly, and he puts him in charge of Homeland Security. Nobody gives a rat's ass that the guy is gay. This is not, the 1950s.
You know, that could be actually, I was thinking about that, that it doesn't even seem to be an issue. And everyone, the Republican Party, of course, is filled with homophobes. But at the, at the upper levels, they don't seem to have any problem with that. And nobody is making a big deal about it. It's not, in other words, he shouldn't resign because he was gay or had an inappropriate affair. Who cares whether a governor has an inappropriate affair other than his wife? Or husband, or whatever. But if he is involved in some shenanigans, if he is, if there's a corruption because he's appointing people who are unqualified to positions of importance in the state, well, he should get the hell out of there. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Peter. Listen, I've been listening to you for, 10-plus years.
Really?
I mean, I agree with some of the things you say. I don't agree with others. But I appreciate you being there.
Well, thank you.
I think you're going a little overboard on the Bush bashing.
Well, I try to tone it down. I mean, I'm not really letting it out how I really feel.
Well, that's fine, and you're entitled to that feeling. But, between the fanaticism, both on the left and the right, there is a medium of facts.
Where is there fanaticism on the left?
There's all kinds of fanaticism on the left. I mean,
well, name a couple.
Pretty much almost, everything bad you hear about Bush is, someone throwing some sort of bomb at Bush, and the same on the right. All the bad stuff about Kerry. Like, I was really impressed when you made the statement a little while ago about Bush's, service record. I mean, there are records that he was in the Air National Guard.
No, there's not.
There are.
Wait. Well, then, if you can find these, you are eligible for $20,000. If you go to AWOL.com, and I think, and also, what's his name, Gary Trudeau, the creator of Doonesbury, both these Trudeau and this website will give cash rewards to anybody that can prove that George W. Bush actually served his appropriate time in the Air National Guard rather than being AWOL.
Fair enough, but I'll tell you this. The way I understand it, and I have to tell you, I'm coming from a middle perspective. The way I understand it is that there's a missing period of time where some records were destroyed or something. All right. Now,
well, remember what happened. They were destroyed, and then they found them again. And I mean, right. Come on. The guy's a royal scamster, and he has all his life. He's never had to pay the penalty for any of the mistakes he made. Typical rich kid. If you ever went away to a university like I did like Michigan State, you know that these fraternities are filled with these guys that that got born on third base and think they hit a triple, and whenever they screw up, absolutely nothing happens to them.
All right. Well, I really have a whole ton of stuff I wrote down that I wanted to cover with you.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
The whole Swift boat thing with Kerry and all of that. I was really happy to hear you, say, well, that doesn't really matter. You know, who cares at this point? And, you had a caller saying, well, it's a question of whether he lied or not. I guess so. Kerry said that he was in Cambodia. He did in two speeches since, he's been out of the war in Vietnam. But the thing is, he probably misspoke. He was like 50 miles from Cambodia. We'll write that up to, hey, he just misspoke.
Well, I don't have time even to find out whether any of these things are true or not. If he made any of this up, it would be extraordinarily disappointing. Like I said, I wouldn't vote for George Bush if I found out that he actually legitimately served as National Guard unit, and I wouldn't vote against, does that mean the same thing, vote against Kerry if I found out that he in fact had told fibs. I mean, what I care about is what kind of policies is he going to make that's going to affect our cities and my life and the health of people around the world.
Right. Okay, so stealing the election?
Yeah.
Peter, I have to say, I don't buy it.
Okay.
I've looked at everything I can, and I just don't see him stealing the election. The thing that bugs me more than that controversy, Gore won the popular election. Well, gee, why didn't he win the presidency? Well, it's because we have the Electoral College, right?
Sure, but look, I mean, I don't want to go through this for the 100th time or the 200th time, but there's any number of aspects of this vote in Florida, including the purposeful exclusion of African-American voters under the ruse that they were convicted felons, which weren't eligible to vote. This was done purposely by the Secretary of State, the person that was in charge of the balloting process, who was simultaneously the head of the Bush campaign in Florida, where his brother just happened to be governor. I mean, there's a thing in law that says that that judges should not be, I'll send the words out of my mind, but not prejudiced in a case, nor give the appearance of prejudice. And if the appearance here does not lend itself towards the idea that the fix was in the brother's governor, the candidate's brother, the head of his campaign is in charge of voting, and the people that finally make the decision and install him in power are all ones that have been appointed by his father and by the president who was that his father was vice president under. If that doesn't give the appearance of impropriety, that's it. Impropriety, that not only should judges not commit improprieties, they should not give the appearance of impropriety.
Look, I don't, that isn't true. His father did not appoint all of the judges on the Supreme Court.
Oh, there were Reagan. This could be one of these things where we're talking earlier, but someone checked me on this, what was his name? The guy that was the prosecutor of L.A. wrote a book called The Felonious Five, said they'd committed high crimes and misdemeanors, and all five of them should have been impeached, were appointed either by Bush 1 or by Reagan. And if not all five of them, almost all of them.
Well, I'll tell you this much. I'll admit up front that I can't exactly say which medias these were. There were four independent media recounts of the votes in Florida. And these aren't all right.
Wait, I know that. I saw that on Bill O'Reilly. Why don't I say I never see him, and then I'm all I got this quote. I saw O'Reilly say he's a case closed because these independent studies. There were also independent studies that said that Gore won. But the main thing is that 80,000 African Americans were excluded from voting, and over a million throughout the country, African American votes were not counted, according to an independent study. So, plus, as I, you know, as you said, Bush lost the popular election. He shouldn't be sitting in there. If he wasn't, if Gore would have become president like he properly should have, we wouldn't be facing the problems we are today. All right, thank you. Appreciate your call. Hi, WRIF. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. It's Ian from Sarnia. I emailed you around Christmas time about us not living in a democracy, but a plutocracy, rather.
Yeah, that old-fashioned 100-year-old word, which is excellent, which means rule of the rich.
Yes, by basically 1% of the population.
Right.
You know, but I really think that Kerry is going to win this next election, basically because the proverbial baby has their bottle. I mean, Halliburton got their money, you know. Since Bush took office, 42% of the gross domestic product is going to the military-industrial complex. You know, I think all of Bush's buddies have gotten what they've wanted. So I really don't think that Bush is going to win again, you know, because I think there was just, you know, he was a temporary funnel to transport this money back into the, quote, hands where it belongs.
Yeah, they did kind of, I was trying to think of the phrase. All these big companies that have done so well under Bush did a sort of a smash and grab thing where, you know, like the criminals run a car into a window or just run into a place. I know a guy had a jewelry store in Miami, and people and these guys came in with masks, four guys with masks and crowbars, just smashed all of his counters and grabbed everything, and they're out of there in like 90 seconds. So that's essentially what big pharmaceuticals and other companies that have made an extraordinary profit under Bush and continue to fund his campaign. On the other hand, big capital, finance capital, is worried about what Bush has done to the economy. When you go from a $100 billion surplus to a $400 billion deficit, that makes, and now also increased trade deficit of record proportions, and the effect that this has on every one of us. And a lot of people are saying, yeah, but, you know, Kerry looks French. I mean, we're talking about idiots that are concerned with that, or people that are allowing themselves to be diverted by whether Kerry was 50 miles upriver or not, as opposed to what are the impact of all these economic policies are going to have on the amount of money that we bust our butts for, and then wind up with most of this, or with so much of the money going to his corporate buddies like Halliburton, as opposed to real services that would improve the quality of life for every American, so we wouldn't have a city where we're having 800 murders in a year.
Right, exactly. You know, and I don't know. I think that the lobbyists may go after Kerry once he takes office. You know, it was sort of, if you scratch our back, we'll scratch yours, you know, maybe produce a good economy. I really think that Alan Greenspan is, you know, really out to attack Bush, so to speak, because it seems he adjusts the interest rates, you know, not in Bush's favor, let's say, you know.
Well, you never can tell what kind of game so many players have. I mean, there's so many interests, and it's like I said, people, you know, usually find themselves beguiled by what they see on the nightly news. All right, Ian, thanks for making our program international. I appreciate it. We were talking about Bill O'Reilly before. Todd writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. What? Oh, I see what I did. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He says, oh, my God, the caller who thinks that Bill O'Reilly is a fair and balanced source of information is very naive. This man is incapable of any truth. Among the people who use their brains, Bill is nothing more than a joke. Everything that comes out of his mouth is a lie. He's right up there with Rush Limbaugh. In this video, which I would highly recommend, by the way, and particularly if anybody has a friend or a relative that watches Fox News, Outfoxed, F-O-X-E-D. You go to outfoxed.org and even see some outtakes. I think O'Reilly is on there. Maybe I'll try to get that up on the screen. Rupert Murdoch's War on Journalism. Well, I strayed too far from my thought because I just lost it, so we'll go back to your calls. What line are we going to, Dan? That's what I thought. All right. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Yeah, I just wanted you to comment on what's going on in Venezuela. I don't know if you know anything about that.
Well, the Bush regime has done everything it could to try to overthrow the government of Hugo Chavez, including funding groups. Can you imagine that, if Hugo Chavez was sending money to groups in this country that were trying to affect our election? Well, that's exactly what Bushco has done with a section of our tax money. They supported an illegal coup against the government. What was it, last year?
It was in 92, I think.
Yeah, and the problem for Bushco is that Venezuela is sitting on the largest supplier of U.S. oil in the Western Hemisphere.
Yeah.
And this guy is a leftist.
Yeah, he's a, well, it's, I think like 14% of our imported oil comes from Venezuela, and they are like the fifth largest oil exporter in the world.
Yeah.
And I think since he was elected, what he's done, he's made some like radical changes to help the poor. I mean, he's really popular with the poor people and really unpopular with the rich people in that country, which tells you a lot about some of his policies. So he's done things like they have a free education system now. So the poor people can get educated for free now thanks to him. They have free health care now thanks to him. And the Bush administration is totally against him because he's spoken out against the war in Iraq. He's, publicly criticizing the war on terror because it's killing innocent people. And he's been supporting Cuba by selling them cheap oil. And
yeah, so they want him out of there.
Yeah, and he's selling, he's raised, since he's gotten into office, he's raised the prices of the oil that's being sold to us in America. So they want him out of there, even though he was, democratically elected by the people.
Yeah, he got a majority.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't really
watch, TV, but I don't really see too much being spoken about what's going on down there, because I think people don't realize how important it is, because it does affect us, because they have a lot of oil down there.
Mm-hmm.
And, our foreign policy is important because we claim to be so, in favor of democracy, but at the same time, we're not supporting a democratically elected president down there.
Well, that's right. And they actually thought they'd have the results in by 8 p.m. Eastern time today, but there are so many people voting that I think the polls may even still be open, because the line, it took some people seven hours to vote. All right, and I've been checking the news to see whether the result has come in. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Steve writes in just now, commenting on this. He wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Why is it that we've, quote, liberated Iraq and Afghanistan, controlled the world's second largest oil supply, protected Kuwait and Saudi Arabia, spent billions of dollars and shed American blood, have an oil man in power, and yet we are paying the highest gas prices in history? Well, that's a great question, Steve. Given the fact that our treasury is also being plundered and bankrupted in part to support the above, he says, I'm wondering, who's getting rich here? It's not the common little guy. No, well, of course not. What's happening here is that, well, the less your income, the more that things like gas prices and the people that heat with oil is going to, a larger percentage of your income it's going to be. I think we were talking about this some other time. If you're making $100,000 a year and gas, instead of being $1.25, is $1.95, like I just saw, $1.98, in fact, I saw on the way here, it's not going to be a big deal to you. But if you're making $20,000 a year and you're driving like an 87 huge Buick, you're like the fourth owner of it to get to work, you've got an extra problem. Getting bum wages to begin with, and now the price of gasoline is rising. Now, here, you would think that if there is a profit margin, whatever it happens to be, that the oil companies and producers and refiners and what have you want to make, their profits wouldn't go up, Right. In other words, if they're paying, what is it, a barrel? Let's just keep it simple. Say they're paying a dollar a gallon, then to the producers. So then it goes up, and they got to pay a dollar and a quarter. Well, say they were making a quarter before, so they charge a dollar. I'm confusing this. Sorry. Say it was a dollar, and they want to make 25 cents profit. So then they charge a dollar and a quarter, and they make 25 cents on every gallon. Then they all of a sudden they get charged a dollar and a quarter, so they say, well, we got to still get our quarters, so we're going to raise it to a dollar and a half. But in these periods, they wind up, like ExxonMobil and all that, and making extraordinary profits. So why is that? Well, they're gouging us. It's pretty clear. 313-298-WRIF. Let's see if I have listed where our next caller is. Indeed. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, how you doing, Peter?
Doing good.
I just wanted to, you know, make a few comments. One is Bush bashing is apparently used by people who speak the truth about what Bush is doing, and as Harry Truman said, the Republicans stop lying about the Democrats will stop telling the truth about the Republicans. Exactly. As far as the Florida vote.
Wait. One thing. I said this last week, but I love this quote. Harry Truman was known for, in fact, they called him Harry Give 'em Hell Truman.
Right.
And he said, I don't give 'em hell. I just tell the truth, and they think it's hell.
Exactly.
All right. Go ahead. What about the Florida vote?
Well, you know, this has been investigated. This was in Harper's Weekly. It was also even in the New York Times, of course, post-date. But 4 months prior to the election, a Republican-based company got paid $4.1 million to handle these felon lists. Now, before then, there was another company that was only paid $400,000 for this. All they did was they took felon lists and they crunched the numbers. These lists were later found to be 95% inaccurate, okay, in many different counties. And some counties, they found out when they went to the polls. One was a black councilwoman who found out that she was purging lists. Now, DBT, which is a company set up by Republicans and has Republicans on the board, they listed phone calls as a cost. In other words, they were supposed to check to verify the names. Now, they listed this as a cost on their account, but they never could prove that they had phone records verifying this. And when they went to the telephone company to get records that were supposed to be made, they never could find that either. So they probably never made these phone calls, or at least they haven't been able to prove it. Jeb Bush was told by two judges that this was illegal to purge felons from the list, and he just ignored them. And, you know, so this is fact. Now, if you want to find this out, go look at Harper's Weekly. You can type in Florida purge voter list, and you can find all this out for yourself. GregPalast.com is the reporter who broke the story, and he had to break it through the BBC because the news media in this country apparently doesn't do it.
Well, I'll tell you that, as his name is actually pronounced, Greg Palast will be my guest at 1 o'clock tonight Eastern Time.
Excellent.
I have an interview with him, yeah.
He's a really good source of information. One thing, about Bush AWOL, guy says, well, you know, that can't be true, but, well, even the what Bush submitted himself, according to a website which I'll say glcq.com, go there, okay? According to what Bush submitted, apparently in Alabama he did a lot of substitute duty on the weekday.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in Alabama, the reserves were doing stuff on the weekends, not during the weekday. And when he was doing substitute duty, they have to be done within a certain period of time, and they have to be approved by an officer. There were no records of being any of this training that he didn't substitute by an officer, so there was no authorization for them, and all of the substitute that, and this is all the stuff that he submitted to the press, okay, they were like 5 weeks before, in some cases 4 or 5 months after, which is completely against regulations. I mean, there's a lot of discrepancies. I can't go into them.
Oh, yeah, I mean, they're amazing, and in fact, a lot of them are on my website. Hey, I got to take a break. Thanks for the information. I appreciate it. Well, Joe, I hope you haven't turned off the station yet because I'm going to read your email. Joe writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Remember we were saying that Bill O'Reilly keeps telling all these people to shut up, right? And just what a miserable, overbearing SOB he is, and the way he dominates the airwaves of people that he invites on. I mean, that's what's so strange. So here is what Joe writes. Please, for the sake of every Republican and everyone else, please shut up. I don't know whether he caught this conversation, he's just playing into it or not. So get this, for the sake of every Republican, shut up, he wants to move. Then for everyone else, so he wants me not to speak my mind for everyone else, because you always get these little snapshots into these authoritarian personalities, and this is obviously one. Joe says, I will never listen to the riff until you are on another radio station. If the Democrats are... Okay, let me see. He's got a number of thoughts here. I feel your show is the most useless show on that radio, on WRIF. I'm washing my hands of WRIF. Now, this is pretty weird. There's all this great rock and roll, you know, every day, day in and day out. So he's not going to listen because of me. Anyways, he says, if the Democrats are such a great party for the people, never said that. I got a lot of problems with the Democrats, and when President Kerry is in office, I'm going to be giving him holy hell, unholy hell, I should say, because he's not going to be doing enough, I'm sure. If the Democrats are such a great party for people going into Vietnam, what about Bill Clinton? Hard to understand your sentence there, but what he's saying is, didn't Clinton scam out of the draft in Vietnam? Well, lots of middle-class Americans did. A lot of America, because, and then it got left essentially to the working class and the poor and the minorities to fight it. That's the way it always. The rich man's war, poor man's fight. That's no different. You go, Willie Nelson has a great song about that on the new, what the hell's his name? I can't think of it. Anyway, another song like that. But anyway, Clinton did what a lot of other middle class people did that didn't support the war. They used their class privilege to get out of it. This was across the board, Democrats and Republicans. But the difference is that people like Bill Clinton protested the war in Vietnam. He didn't want to go kill Vietnamese. 3 million Vietnamese were killed by American forces there, and they managed to kill 60,000 of our troops sent there unreasonably by a Democrat, and then most, most of it by Nixon, the Republican. So Bill Clinton opposed the war and in a principled way fought against it. Draft resistance was a large part of it. There were, I forgot what, something like 1.5 million or draft offenses, something, you know, people that just said, we're not going to go to this war. We're not going to go 10,000 miles away to kill Vietnamese and be killed. A number of people did. But again, not very much of the middle class, as usual, none of the wealthy class, or next to none. You know, like Kerry went over there. So that's the difference. So he says, I'm washing my hands at WRIF. All right, okay. Well, isn't that, you know, no, never mind, I was going to say something awful. We'll be right back.
WRIF.com.
Time is running out. Time is running out on the best deal ever. On your opportunity to make an investment that can help you make more money, that will change your life forever. Time is running out on your chance to register for Oakland Community College's fall 2004 semester. Final walk-in registration for fall classes is on August 30th and September 1st. Register on the web or visit any of OCC's 5 convenient campuses to sign up for your choice of thousands of day, night, and weekend classes in literally hundreds of subjects like business, psychology, computer information systems, physics, English, pre-engineering, robotics, and more. If you want to take a giant step to a better life, Oakland Community College is your educational answer. Call or visit your local OCC campus now. They're in Auburn Hills, Waterford, Farmington Hills, Royal Oak, and Southfield. Remember, final walk-in registration is August 30th and September 1st. Oakland Community College. Get anywhere from here.
Fall classes begin September 2nd. Get your clubs ready and head out to Treetops Resort. Treetops, located in Gaylord, Michigan, is home to the number one par 3 course in the U.S. Treetops is proud to be rated the top golf course to play by Golf Magazine, as well as being recognized as being a Silver Medal Award winner. Also ranked by USA Today as the top 10 places to take dad, this is certainly a place where you need to be. There are 4 unforgettable courses, 3 of them designed by top-notch golfers. So call now and make certain you're able to take in the incredible sights of Treetops Resort. Call 1-888-TREETOPS. That's 1-888-TREETOPS. Be sure to ask for the WRIF Stay and Play offer for just $99 during the month of August. That's 1-888-TREETOPS for this special price. Oh, and when you call, make sure you ask for the great prices on ski packages available for this winter. Offer subject to availability. Some restrictions apply. The $99 Stay and Play offer won't last forever, so call now. 1-888-TREETOPS.
This is
WRIF.com.
Hello.
How are you? What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
What the hell does Detroit want with Arkansas?
Well, you know, just same old thing. Just shoot the breeze, you know.
Damn, I ain't got time to mess you damn people up there. I got work to do here, and you keep calling, raising hell with me. What's the matter? Every week, or...
Well, you become an important part of the program, Delbert. It actually should be a compliment.
Yeah.
What the hell does Michigan want with Arkansas?
I guess this is the first time we've run into you in a bad mood.
Well, you know, I guess everybody gets that once in a while after so much irritation.
Yeah.
Did something happen the last time we talked?
No, I don't reckon. This is the way it has to be, I guess. Let me tell you one thing before you hang up.
All right.
All right.
This is an April Fool's joke on you bastards.
You crotchety old curmudgeon.
I always knew you were bastard, but man, oh man.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast program. On the Riff. All day Thursday, your walk right in free station, 101, The Riff, unleashes a ticket blitz Thursday. Keep your radio locked on 101 WRIF all day this Thursday for your chance to hook up with tickets to all of the hottest concerts and events happening around the Motor City. Hooking you up like no other Detroit station can. Listen for your chance to win. Then call the Riff request line at 313-298-WRIF.
Don't forget.
You can always improve your chances to win by joining the Riff Cyber Crew today and score your totally unfair internet advantage.
Just log on to WRIF.com.
It's Ticket Blitz Thursday on the Riff all day Thursday from your walk right in free station. 101 The Riff.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
Bill Clinton proving one more time he'll talk to anybody for a crumb of attention as he talked to us again.
What about Jennifer Flowers? I mean, do you regret lying about her on 60 Minutes?
No, I don't. I don't think so. No.
Well, why not?
Because I wanted to get elected, and I just felt like if the nation's first big exposure to me was hearing about me spanking a big strange ass, yanking on a handful of her blonde hair, or staring at the tattoo on the top of her head, I don't think I would have been elected, and I just felt the battle for the direction of this country was more important.
What tattoo on the top of Jennifer Flowers' head?
It says, let go of my ears, I know what I'm doing.
Surely, well, that just reminded me, on Oprah, you sounded like you really felt bad for Monica and everything she went through.
Well, as I said, they plunked that monster down in a hotel room, grilled her, then they were going to wire her big old floppy.
Bush was driving the country into debt. Now, I mean, he seemed to have blown, how do you do this? $500 billion was a $100 billion surplus, and now it's $400 billion deficit. I mean, what are these people listening to, thinking that, like that Joe said he wasn't going to listen anymore? That's not true, or it's okay? During that period, since Bush has been president, 9 million people have lost health coverage. This is an international disgrace. United States, the only country in the industrial world that does not have a national health program, and people are losing by the millions their health care coverage. And this doesn't even speak to the people whose benefits have worsened. How many of you know someone, including yourself, including me, whose benefits have lessened? Mine sure have. Mine have. And it's not like the company I work for is evil. One thing, my union gives me some coverage. And they have to, they have to keep everything financially solvent, so they have to reduce benefits. And things are getting better. Things are getting worse dramatically. 9 million people more without health insurance, added to somewhere between 40 and 60 million people that don't have it at all, depending on how you count it. All right, let's go back to our phone call. Oh, yeah, one other note. We're talking about Foxhole News. This video, outfoxed, F-O-X-E-D, outfoxed.org. And they have Sean Hannity on a lot, a liar of incredible proportions, and another one of these right-wing bullies. One of the things that he does is that he keeps his levels, what we call the levels. You know, I've got a control board here. Pardon me. And I can push these levels up and down. And there's a couple of things. I think if you're listening on the internet, you might hear my voice being louder than the callers. Although we've tried to deal with that, but hopefully, in fact, maybe some of you next people can tell me that my voice and the caller's voice should be at the same level, because they have these processors here that take even low noises, like when you have real soft stuff in rock and roll records, and pump it up. So it's hard. It works to keep the levels equal. Hannity, when he has people on his show, on his radio show, he has their levels at about three quarters of his. So he has this booming voice, and then in the back you have, "Well, Sean, I don't agree with you," and he can just bull rate over them, and sometimes he even talks over them. He had the ex-Secretary of the Treasury on. Is it Rubin? Was that his name? I can't remember exactly who it was. And he asked Hannity asked him a question, and Rubin begins to answer. So he didn't say it in one sentence because it was a complex question. He says, and he keeps telling him to stop. And he says, "Can you believe this guy?" And he's talking over him. And Rubin's in the background talking about these complex subjects about the economy that affect all of us. And Hannity, the bully, is typical of right-wingers. You've got to remember that always. Politics, fascist, personality, bully. It's typical of the far right. Typical, if you say, "I'm a conservative and I'm just sort of an ordinary person, I'm a Republican, I'm an ordinary person," I'm not putting that all off on you. But the media guys, the political guys, the operatives within the Republican Party, absolutely. Politics, fascist, personality, bully. All right. If the shoe doesn't fit, don't wear it. 313-298-WRIF. I'm Peter Werby. I've totally lost my slip. Oh, we're going to line two. Three, two, two. Okay. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Good evening, Peter. Mr. Positive.
Yeah, okay. Hello. Be positive.
I will. Hey, I've got so many questions, but I know time is short. You talk about a tax cut for the people that make $1.2 million. I've got to ask you. These are just questions.
Sure.
How does one create a business that takes capital? How much money do you think someone should make to facilitate, to build a business, to buy the capital, to do the rent? You're talking about jobs, but doesn't it take money to create jobs?
Well, sure. I mean, nobody is talking about a situation that confiscates wealth. Although, up until 1960, that everything over, I think it was over $6 million or $3 million or something like that, was taxed at 90%. There was a sort of a social agreement that wealth at some point transfers into unneeded opulence on one hand, and on the other hand, and more importantly for democracy, turns into political power. So that somebody earlier talked about a plutocracy, the rule of the rich, that you can virtually buy candidates. And you see this, the way the corporations can troll, particularly the Republican Party, but also the Democratic Party as well. So we're talking about a situation with people that average $1.2 million in income that do not need a tax cut at all. Who needs a tax cut is the middle class and the working class. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, it's arbitrary, because if I make $1.2 million, you know, you're forgetting the one basic premise, is that if I want to make $1.2 million, I forego a lot of things in the immediate future.
Oh, yeah. I appreciate the compassion you're showing for our wealthier citizens. I mean, they are abused by people like me, and they've got a lot of problems. I mean, people accuse them of being uncaring, of simply supporting political policies that enrich them at the expense of other people. So, Mr. Positive, I appreciate that you are being a kind person towards our wealthy citizens.
It's not necessarily I'm being compassionate, but understanding the economic issues of what a price is, how do we create jobs, how do we build jobs, how do we make a profit to stay in business. so I can facilitate more jobs.
Yeah, but you don't need this tax cut, because the only thing these wealthy people did was to invest it further in speculative stocks, nothing that's going to create jobs. And you can look at very successful countries in which people work a lot less than us, have extraordinarily higher standards of living, that don't have slums, that don't have cities where 800 people kill one another, that have medical care for everybody, that have paid family leave, that have, by law, 35-hour a week work weeks. And you know what? All the CEOs that aren't making, you know, $123 million a year, they're making a paltry sum of maybe $750,000 a year. Everybody seems to be a lot happier and not don't have countries filled with, in, you know, angry people and depressed people and violent people and sick people. That's what happens when wealth is concentrated, and that's what's happening here. So stay positive. Appreciate your call. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, my name's Joe. I wanted to, mention the possibility of a military draft if Bush is reelected or elected. I guess.
Yeah, elected. Yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, the body count's almost at 1,000 for just Iraq.
Right.
We're sending, you know, we've recalled thousands of soldiers who thought they were retired.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these guys are in their mid-50s, and they get over to Iraq to work on a helicopter or something, and they have a heart attack or keel over from heat stroke. They're not physically fit for military service.
Sure, and some of these temperatures in Najaf, where currently, as we speak, the United States troops have been ordered in to destroy this city, and reporters have been ordered out to disguise what's going on there. It's like 120 degrees.
Yeah, well, yeah, plus, I mean, they politely asked all the citizens of Najaf to leave.
Yeah, this is like Jenin, when the Israeli army went into that, that refugee camp. This is extraordinarily hideous. I mean, what are our troops doing fighting Iraqis? These aren't foreign fighters. These aren't Saddam Hussein loyalists. These are Iraqi citizens that do not agree with the United States occupying their country. They do not agree that a government is legitimate that has been established by the illegal occupying power. And the answer that the politicians have forced on the generals, and the generals order the hapless grunts, is to destroy Najaf, to kill people, to raise the already high civilian death rate. As you or another caller said, our rate of KIA, killed in action, is approaching 1,000.
Well, it'll be past 1,000, certainly by November.
Sure.
If you add up Afghanistan and Iraq, it's already passed.
Right.
And you know that right now there's a bill in the House, and there's another bill in the Senate to reinstate the draft, and nobody's talking about it, especially politicians, because with an election around the corner, it's political suicide.
Yeah.
So right now the bills are stalled.
Yeah, I mean, we have these people that have been, whose duty ended and are being recalled all the same. And this, and the other thing, a lot of these people that are in the Guard are first responders, fire and police. And these people are being sent back to Iraq for more tours. I mean, it is just astounding to me on any level where, unless you're a corporate lobbyist, how anybody could support these guys. All right, I got to run. I only got time, Joe, for about another call or so. Thank you. Maybe two. Hang on. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. This is Kevin from Romulus, and I have a question and a comment.
Sure, Kevin, go ahead.
I agree with you on many, many issues, but my question to you is this. If things are so bad, maybe, you know, more people who have better ideas should be running. And my question is, why wouldn't a person like you run? Like, if the question is about campaign finance and stuff like that, somebody's got to bail the cat at some point.
Somebody's got to what?
Somebody's got to bail the cat. You know the story of how all the mice were getting killed by the cat, so they came up with the idea of putting a bell around the cat's neck.
Oh, got to bell the cat, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not going to run for president.
Well, the point is, at any level, whether it's, you know, local, state, whatever, the point is, if change has to happen, it has to happen. I mean, it will not happen with any amount of op-ed pieces, any amount of radio shows, any amount of TV shows, you know.
Well, you know what they do, Kevin, when you run for office? They look in your past.
Well... you're running on the future, not on the past. Right?
I know, man, but my whole history is rock and roll. I mean, I would hate to see... Let's leave it at that, huh?
Okay.
I'll consider it, though. All right. Senator Werby. No, never mind. I don't want to go there. One more call. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
First, I'd like to tell you that I very much appreciate your show.
No, thank you.
The biggest question I have is why so much information is not given to the public by the media. I just found it really disturbing when I saw the Fahrenheit 9/11 movie.
Sure.
And I never knew about Bush's walk to the White House and his huge protest and how he never even got to walk to the White House, just for example.
Mm-hmm.
How can so much be kept from us?
Well, unfortunately, you really have to go at it. I mean, and because this is my job, I'm not bragging, not trying to say how hip and cool and informed I am, but I knew everything in Fahrenheit 9/11, and I thought about that as I was watching. I was thinking, well, I know that. Some of this was on my website and all that. And then I was with these people, these friends of ours that are fairly savvy, and they were saying, I didn't know that. Wow, I never saw this all put together like that. So that's what's not there, this the assembling. That's what the debt of gratitude the American people owe to Michael Moore, is that the assembling of this as a concept of what I call Bushco, Bush Incorporated, represents. And but if you really went at it, like I knew there were not weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And as, of course, I wasn't there. I wasn't with the UN inspectors and knew there wasn't. I had to depend on other news sources. So if you really dug, you could find it, even though the New York Times and the Washington Post in the last 2 months have both come out and were self-critical of how badly they reported the whole issue of weapons of mass destruction and said that they weren't on the job and they let their readers down. Yeah, they let us down real badly, they being the kind of the premier papers in the country and who set the tone for other papers, essentially allowed Bush to walk away with an issue that anybody that investigated it thoroughly knew was a lie of major proportions. So,
right. And I feel very lucky because I have a sister who is Little Miss Researcher and just finds interest and finds things out, and we just feel very much in the dark.
Well, yeah, and see, you shouldn't have to do what I do as part of my job. You should be able to flick on any radio broadcast, pick up any newspaper, and in that period, because there was so much opposition, I mean, that there were demonstrations of tens of millions of people around the world, there were huge organizations devoted to opposing the war in Iraq. And every time Bush said some enormous lie about the fact that there were Iraqi ships circling the globe with unmanned vehicles that contained chemical warfare that could, you know, hit Des Moines or Nebraska, It should have said, anti-war leaders denounce this as being based on nothing. They could have found any number of legitimate spokespeople. In other words, if you're just, they won't give any airtime to somebody who's just a citizen. Like, they wouldn't quote you. But they could have quoted MoveOn.org. They could have quoted United for Peace and Justice people. Any number of people that had legitimate standing in the community that knew and that would have saved us this immense bloodbath, this slaughter gate that Bush has led us into. So the compliant corporate media essentially acted like Pravda and Izvestia. They parroted the party line. It's as simple as that.
Right. And I, my boyfriend is actually in the military, and he's in Afghanistan right now. But
wow.
Every once in a while, he'll tell me something random about Korea or something that's in their military newspaper. And I'm like, I don't know what he's talking about. I said, what are you talking about? He's like, oh, I just read it in our paper.
Like Stars and Stripes.
We have on post here.
Yeah.
Like, it's no big deal. And it is, they're really serious matters. That's not talked about anywhere else.
Do you use the internet?
Yes, I do.
Okay. You ever look at my website?
No.
That's okay. It's okay. Most people haven't. Some have. About 260,000 people have.
I need to, and I think to, but not. I just forget, to be honest.
Well, here's what I'm saying. I'm not trying to. You know, I don't benefit by you going to my
right.
website. But my last name is spelled Werbe. So it's peterwerbe.com. And you go down a little on the right, and there are these sources that I go to, commondreams.org, buzzflash.com, truthout.org. And this is where I get my information. I'm not, you know, I can't know all this stuff. I'm just sitting here in Detroit like everybody else. I have to depend on other sources. And these are excellent sources for news. And then, like, counterpunch.org is something where you can get analysis and... it takes a little bit of work, but ultimately it's rewarding because you know you're not going to get fooled by these people that are taking it for granted that you're going to believe what they say when they're a pack of liars. And hey, I gotta go.
Thank you.
This is WRIF in Detroit. I'm Peter Werbe. Thank you for listening to the phone-in section of Night Call. I'm going to read back with Greg Palast. That's P-A-L-A-S-T. You can go to gregpalast.com and get an idea of what Greg's about. Or better yet, stay tuned, and I'll be interviewing him.
It's time to take your family on tour and travel like a rock star. Hi, Christine Michael here for Walt Michaels RV Center in Belleville. We've all been to concerts and have been amazed at the luxury motor coaches these rock stars travel in. Well, Walt Michaels making it affordable for you and your family to travel like a rock star too. And you won't even have to get on stage. All this month, you can get out and see America in a 37-foot cross-country sports coach limited. It's a diesel pusher with double slide-outs for as low as $7.39 a month. So pull up to your next concert, football game, or NASCAR event in a luxurious motorhome from Walt Michaels RV and give everyone around you a little dose of RV envy. You'll be amazed at how affordable it is to travel like a rock star. Give us a call at 800-697-2500. We'll be looking for you.
This is another Riff Rock concert. It was the best of times.
One small step for man.
It was the worst of times.
Like it or not, we live in times of danger and uncertainty.
It was the time of the Doors.
Now, it is time again. The concert that wasn't supposed to happen. The 21st Century Tour. The Doors of the 21st Century. Live. Saturday, August 21st at DTE Energy Music Theater. Ray Manzarek, Robbie Krieger, Ian Astbury. The Doors of the 21st Century.
History in the making.
The tour they said was impossible. Don't wait. Tickets are on sale now. CC.com, ThePalaceNet.com, The Palace and DTE Energy Music Theater box offices. All Ticketmaster locations are charged at 248-645-6666. The Doors of the 21st Century. Brought to you by Miller Genuine Draft.
Men, how do you like to last even longer in the bedroom? Now you can with Maxtral, the new climax control system for men. Maxtral lets you last longer than you ever thought possible, so you can prolong the pleasure and maximize the control. Maxtral is scientifically formulated to give you the kind of stamina you want and a woman never forgets. Maxtral is for men of all ages. It's available without a prescription, and it can give you more satisfaction than ever before. Now you can make the pleasure go on and on with Maxtral, maximum control for men. Ask your doctor about Maxtral or call now and try Maxtral free for 30 days. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580. You pay only shipping and handling. Call now, have your credit card handy, and try Maxtral free for 30 days. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580.
Take on new look, Rogers and Holland. Take on new look, Rogers and Holland. Take on new look, Rogers and Holland.
Let's face it. You don't ask someone to marry you every day. So am I ever glad that I took my mom's advice and went to Rogers and Holland's Jewelers? They were so helpful. I had no idea how many styles there were. I even dared to compare with the other stores in the mall, and, well, there just is no comparison. I got her the ring of her dreams, diamonds galore, in a 3/4-carat total weight marquee engagement ring with baguettes and brilliants, only $899. I had enough left over to get Mom a little token of my thanks, a 14-carat diamond heart pendant for only $99. Rogers and Hollins, you made me a hero.
During our Red Tag Sale, dare to compare our incredible values. With savings like these, they won't last forever. Ask about our 12-month same-as-cash credit plan, only at Rogers and Hollins in Southland Center, Macomb, Lakeside, and 12 Oaks Malls. See store for details.
Hello, baby. This is the king. The king of car shopping, that is. But it ain't too tough to be the king when you're rocking with Dick Scott Kia in Canton and Dick Scott Kia of Waterford, baby. With a job and $199, man, even you could be approved for a brand new car.
Do you have a job? Do you have $199? Dick Scott Kia in Canton and Dick Scott Kia of Waterford can get you approved for a brand new Kia Rio starting at just $7,899. Plus, every new Kia is backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty. Do you have a job?
I'm the king, baby.
Do you have $199?
Well, I've got a gig at the VFW Thursday night. Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Make every mile count only at Dick Scott Kia. Michigan Avenue, a quarter mile west of I-275 in Canton. And Dick Scott Kia of Waterford. At the Summit Place Mall on Elizabeth Lake Road, just west of Telegraph. Call 866-6KIA now. That's 866-6KIA-NOW.
To qualify buyers plus tax, title, and plate fees, all rebates to dealer.
All right, thank you very much for joining me. A pleasure, as usual, to talk with you. And we're waiting for our guest, Greg Pallast. Greg Pallast has been on the show before, and you probably know him very well from the previous conversations we have, as the author of the best-selling The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. He has been a BBC Television's Newsnight reporter doing award-winning investigations. He's written for Harper's Magazine, The Guardian. We could go on and on with Greg Pallast's service to investigative journalism, to the point where, at you may remember some previous conversations with Greg, that he couldn't find work in the United States. He had to work in the United Kingdom. Well, he's back in the United States doing the kind of work that he can do the best. Things have opened considerably. So while we're waiting for him, I'm going to just pass a little time here. And I hate to do this to you listeners, but play a little solitaire here. Let me see. I got a black king and here's the Red Queen. Wow, look at the Red Queen. It's Catherine Harris, who was the Secretary of State from Florida. All right, we're just fooling you. Greg Pallast is on the line with me. Hi, Greg.
Hey, brother.
How are you? And Greg Pallast has a brand new, well, the first time you've ever put out a deck of cards. It's called the Joker's Wild W's Trick Deck, the only stacked deck you can't play without. It's 52 cards plus a couple of jokers, and we'll tell you in a minute who's on the joker. And it's some familiar faces, a few not too familiar that you should know about it. It's an oversized deck, and it's absolutely incredible. It's got great drawings by Robert Grossman, whose cartoons have appeared in The Nation and The New York Times. And if I start telling everything else you're doing, Greg, I won't have any time to ask a question. Is it true what I said? I mean, that things have opened up and there is a place for the Greg Pallasts?
We're sneaking in, you know, we're sneaking past the electronic border guards. And, you know, so that's right. So I have a deck of cards out. See, another sneaky, tricky thing. So, you know, if they won't put my stuff in the New York Times, at least, you know, you could play solitaire with them or something. So these big tarot cards, big size tarot cards, like the illustrated version of my book, except, you know, pretty funny and great illustrations. But
And, of course, you know, there's a film out, which is Fahrenheit 9-1-1, based on the investigations we originally did with BBC television, which will... So, hey, instead of going to see, reading the book or seeing the movie, get the deck of cards. But the so we're doing that. And any other way we can sneak ourselves, you know, past the mine police. You know, at the moment... So I'm also, you know, some of the stories keep coming back.
Yeah, they do. In fact, one, the Florida story that you uncovered about how the vote was stolen in 2000, at the end of July, you and Michael Moore and a couple of Florida representatives from the U.S. House of Representatives went down to Florida to make sure that what you say, what happened in 2000, doesn't happen again. Fill us in, including you have to give a little bit of history from 2000 as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, as you figured out, one way that I get my stories into the U.S. is that when CBS won't run my BBC television reports, it is given to the fat guy in the chicken suit, and Michael Moore gets them out. So we held a press conference, Michael and I. The idea was to say, look, we know what you did. We watched you do it in 2000. And the main way that they stole the election in 2000 in Florida was by knocking off tens of thousands of voters, tens of thousands of voters off the voter rolls by calling them felons, criminals who can't vote, and most of them are just guilty of, you know, voting while black. 95% of the people on a list of 94,000 names, 95% were innocent, but most, 4-1 Democrats over Republicans, that was your election.
What happened when an African-American man or woman came to the polls in 2000 and they're...
I shouldn't be laughing, but, you know, it's your democracy, buddy. What happened was is that they were told, you know, either their names disappeared or they weren't there. They're told, you're criminals. Go ask Jeb Bush for a pardon. You know, people didn't commit crimes. Had to go request, get fingerprinted and request a pardon from Jeb Bush for crimes that they never committed. And, you know, one network, U.S. network, asked me to find them, some of these evil felon voters. And they said, but make sure that you find us someone we can put on camera who clearly is innocent. What they meant was clearly is white, right? Because I gave them a hospital worker who the state itself says an innocent guy named Willie Steen. He works in a hospital. And unlike our president, he served 4 years in the military, right? He lost his vote. He's called a criminal. But, you know, he's a black guy with cornrow hairdo and all that. And so obviously he wasn't clearly innocent. So it was very difficult to get this into U.S. media. This year, finally, CNN picked up the story. By the way, people don't know how that happened. Jesse Jackson flew to Atlanta and said, pick up Greg Palast's story. We're going to pick it. Your office is in Atlanta.
Wait a minute. Go back a little. You were being ironic, right, when you said that he was guilty, he had cornrows and everything. In other words, he had never been convicted.
No, he'd never been convicted of any crime. This guy is you know, innocent as the day is long. I've got to tell you, a sweet guy named Willie Steen. You know, completely innocent of any crime. The state has said so. And they still won't, Catherine Harris still wouldn't let him vote. And they're doing the same thing this year. Jeb Bush and his henchlet, a woman named Hood, who has taken over from Catherine Harris, and she makes Catherine Harris look like Thomas Jefferson. This woman is like, you know, like rabid Republican partisan fixer. And she put out a list of 47,000 names. Even her chief of elections, who tolerated Catherine Harris, resigned.
Huh.
Didn't have to defend this thing. And she put out a list of 47,000 more innocent people, thousands of innocent people, black voters, some of the same people that had been put back on by court order last time. They're off again. Same stuff, same game. And now they've got new games involving computers. And so I'm working on that story, too. And we have some of that in the cards, and we got the... You know, actually, people go to my website, gregpalast.com, to get the latest in what will make you ill.
All right, Greg Palast is my guest, and it's P-A-L-A-S-T, so it's gregpalast.com. Lots there, and it changes very frequently with the events of the day. In fact, if we have some time later in the show, I want to ask you about a recent article that's on there. And Greg has just published The Joker's Wild, W's Trick Deck. It's actually a deck of cards, and it's filled with images. The Joker, George W. Bush, and...
What's so funny, buddy?
Okay.
The joke's on you, you know.
And you can actually play cards with him. My wife and I were playing cards with him, and then I said, come on, discard. And she said, wait a minute, I'm reading. So it's a little...
The first investigative
pack of playing cards in America. But I try to give it some humor because, you know, it's so grim that if you don't laugh, you know, I mean, that's what the Dalai Lama said, you know, would it be better if I cried? You know, it's so grim. So, you know, there's a lot of, you know, grim humor. But the other thing in it that I was happy to do, it's the first authored deck of cards. And one thing I want to do is have a suit of, like, good people. Like, not everyone is, like, a creepy, evil, you know, profiteering scumball. I mean, have you seen the Peter Werby card?
No.
No, that's in the next deck.
I was going to say, I'm going Raiden.
Sorry.
Oh, my ego just got inflated and deflated.
You're going to be in the special Greg Palast Guantanamo Wing set of cards.
Oh, I love that. Hey, let's go back to Florida when you went down there with Michael Moore and Representatives Peter Deutsch and Corrine Brown joined you. So you're there, and I mean, what was the reaction to the press, the people, Bush?
We'd actually made our announcement in Boston. We're going down there. Then I went down with Congresswoman Brown to Jacksonville. Moore will join us later. But went down and to Jacksonville, where 27,000 votes were not counted in the last election. 27,000 votes in the city of Jacksonville. Very interesting. The Congresswoman and I went to the office of the election supervisor. And the guy in charge there, I said, so what happened to 27,000 votes? Interestingly enough, the majority of them were cast in just a few precincts, all black precincts in Corrine Brown's district. And so that was quite interesting. So, gee, whose votes could they have been? According to the election supervisor, 5,000 people cast blank ballots. So they went all the way to the polling station, walked in, and then didn't vote it for anyone and walked out. 5,000 people. Quite an amazing place, Jacksonville. Never happened anywhere else. And I said, well, how'd that happen? He said, well, some people, you know, don't want to vote. I said, so they drove all the way to the polls and they decided not to vote, right? But then here's something interesting. If you stick their cards through the reading machine, see, because what happened was is that they have those little chads, right? People try to punch votes, but the cards wouldn't punch through. You know, it's not that black people are too weak to punch through, right? They had garbage machines, right, which they knew they were putting in there. Every time they ran the cards through the machines, those partly punched holes would suddenly open up. And they would get another 100 votes for George Bush and another 200 votes for Al Gore. So I said, in other words, if you kept running the cards through the machine and the holes would start opening up, if you just kept running those so-called blank ballots through the machine, we'd have a few hundred more votes for Al Gore and we'd have a different president. And he's a Republican officially, grinned, and he said, that's right.
Oh, isn't that sweet?
Gotcha!
but well, how much of a difference does it make now? I mean, for some odd reason, one I never understood, neither Clinton nor particularly Gore made much of a deal about it. They even showed up at the coronation, or what do they call it now, the inauguration.
Yeah, yeah, right.
And as we see in the Michael Moore...
It's really called a coup d'etat, but, you know, we try not to... In fact, Corrine Brown, after she saw... a DVD I have, by the way, coming out. She saw the advance copy. She got so mad she ran across the lawn in Washington to Congress and said, the Republicans engineered a coup d'etat in 2000. And she was censured, and her words were struck. How about that? So it was a coup d'etat, and censure me.
We saw in the Michael Moore film, Fahrenheit 9/11, there is Al Gore presiding.
I have Mr. Ashcroft at the door, but go ahead.
All right.
Yeah.
Here in the Michael Moore film, Fahrenheit 9/11, there is Al Gore presiding as president of the Senate, where members of the Congressional Black Caucus are trying to get a sponsor for a challenge to the results of the 2000 election. And Al, the rightful winner, that won the popular vote, had the election taken from him. I'm going to be a little less partisan by his father's friends on the Supreme Court. And what's with Al Gore? I mean, why did he let this be stolen from him?
Well, actually, Moore and I were given the inside on that when we were up in Boston. Because Corrine Brown, again, was one of the people that said, you know, I need a senator, in other words, a white guy, to stand up and let us have a debate over the theft of the election. The answer was that the Democrats sold out for some committee seats that were offered by Trent Lott. On the incoming Congress, he said, look, you know, we have the right to control the who gets on what committee, so we're going to give you another half dozen committee seats, but we want no debate on the Electoral College vote.
Because it wouldn't have stuck anyways.
You know what? But you know, it would have stuck. Because you know what? Then the American people would have known. see, and that's why the Republicans offered something for it. And see, the Democrats always, I don't mind Democrats selling out, but they sell out so cheap. That's the problem. It's their price is way too low. They don't understand. And, of course, what did they get out of it? George Bush walked in. Exactly what type of benefit did they get in Congress? You know, what yeah. Democratic legislation has passed? You know, so well, actually, I guess the Patriot Act, which was sponsored by Joe Lieberman.
There you go. Republican light. Hey, my guest is Greg Palast on the Peter Werbe Show. He has just issued the Joker's Wild W's Trick deck. It's actually a deck of cards all illustrated by Robert Grossman. It's published by Seven Stories Press. You can go to gregpalast.com, P-A-L-A-S-T. And, tell me more about what's going to happen in Florida. I have some information here. According to the St. Petersburg Times, on July 29th, the Republican Party of Florida has urged its supporters to use absentee ballots because the new electronic voting machines do not have a paper ballot to verify your vote, so the Republicans are worried about these machines. What's
going
on?
Republicans have, there's a lady named Sandra Morsam. She was Harris's predecessor, another kind of henchlet of Jeb Bush, and she went from Secretary of State and head of Bush for Governor Committee to selling these electronic voting machines, these computer voting machines, for a company called ES&S. So that, in other words, the campaign chairwoman for Jeb is selling the voting machines. Now, I'm sure that doesn't bother any of you who prefer your elections pre-cooked. But, you know, for the rest of us who don't like elections that are microwavable, we get a bit nervous. In fact, they tried out these machines in Broward County, and here's what happened. In the white precincts, all seemed to go quite well. We don't know what happened in those black boxes, but they went quite well. In the black precincts, there were no passwords that were working. People couldn't get votes into the machines, couldn't get them out. Thousands of black votes were lost because of the computerization. In other words, it worked exactly as Jeb wanted it to work.
Though this is the cyberspace version of the way the vote was stolen from black people in the late 19th century until they actually, it's not the intimidation, it's not Knight Riders, it's not the Ku Klux Klan, but you disappear into cyberspace.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's what I call Jim Crow in cyberspace, or Bob Kuttner calls lynching by laptop. And that's what's happening. In fact, Chris, I was just invited, very unusual to have a journalist asked to testify before the U.S. Civil Rights Committee, but they wanted me to bring out a point, which their own statisticians had discovered, which is that in the last election, 2000, nationwide, 1 million black people cast ballots that were never counted. Let me repeat that. 1 million black people cast ballots that were never counted. What happened is that just like black people get in America, get the worst schools, the worst hospitals, they get the worst voting machines. And that's deliberate to make sure that their votes don't count. There's endless technical glitches. You don't need many. Remember, that's only about, you know, you're talking there about 2% of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all you need. And they know that, you know, so when you have that type of Jim Crow thumb on the electoral scale, that's a huge, huge issue. And I have to tell you, Jesse Jackson made John Edwards sit down and watch my video that I made for BBC, and so he would understand what was going on. And Kerry has now complained about the million missing black votes. Like, he suddenly realized, gee, maybe that'll affect my election. You know?
Yeah, hello, hello, John.
Boy.
Yeah.
You know, the little light bulb goes on that kind of missed poor Al Gore. So Kerry's a bit nervous about it, but, you know, on the other hand, whether the Democratic Party is going to be moving on it, I don't know. But, yeah, computer balloting, you know, yeah, you know, I guess there's no real problem. You may have already voted. They just haven't told you how.
Well, it seems, on the face of it, of course, in the modern age where now everything is done by computers, this interview is being recorded on computers, and it certainly seems the way to go. On the other hand, I think it's beginning to seep into public consciousness, particularly with the idea of no paper trail, that this is not a reliable way to vote. What in the hell is wrong with making an X on a piece of paper? Boy, am I 20th century.
Well, let's put it this way. The most successful democracies, like Sweden and other places where no one questions the ballot, there is a high-tech, cheap, reliable way to vote. It's called paper ballots with optical readers. That's automated. in which you have an optical reader right in the voting booth. If you make a mistake, you get a new ballot. And in the white areas of Florida, that's what they use. In the black areas, they have paper ballots that's read somewhere else, and if you make a mistake, you lose your vote.
Hmm.
So if you have the optical reader right in the voting booth. Now, here's the trick. The optical readers cost one-fifth the price of the computer machines. The optical readers have less than a 1% failure rate, whereas computers have 2, 3, and 4% failure rates. If you think 2, 3, and 4% is okay, think about that. That's in a 70-million vote election, you're talking like 2.5 million votes just go zap into cyberspace, and it's not just anyone's vote. I repeat, it's always it is overwhelmingly these problems happening in Democratic districts, black districts. And one of the reasons, in case you wonder why doesn't the Democratic Party scream, it's only this year that they're getting nervous, because previously the Democratic Party was part of the problem. Let's not forget, the Democratic Party was the Jim Crow Party of the South, and that still is not completely done with. Zell Miller, Senator Zell Miller, the Democrat of Georgia, did his best to suppress the black vote in 2002. Now he's effectively switched parties, but let's not forget, it's not just Republicans that play this game.
Greg Palast, if in some ways this isn't a fair question, any prediction for the 2004 election? Who's going to win?
Evil. It's going to be a fix one way or the other. And, even if the, I don't, as a journalist, I have the good luck that I never have to endorse a candidate. But I can definitely urinate on all of them, and I certainly intend to.
But some people say that when one compares or equates the two of them, Kerry and Bush, that works for Bush.
Mm. Absolutely. I mean, you have to understand, I had a laugh at my good friend Michael, because in 2000 he was talking about there's no difference between the parties. You can't tell the difference between, Bush and Kerry. It's Bush and Gore, same stuff.
This is Michael Moore.
I've got twins, and that's not what twins look like, No, the idea that there's no difference between the parties is a canard created by the ruling class, which likes you to think that there's no difference, okay? That they want you to think that there's no difference because they want to discourage you from voting or throwing away your vote on, Mr. Buchanan. And I know that so many of your viewers voted Buchanan.
Sure.
Especially there in Palm Beach.
Right.
And, that's a real canard. On the other hand, the question is how far apart are they? I don't know. And this is another question entirely. That doesn't mean there's no difference. I was sitting with Michael in Boston, and he was, someone said, well, what about John Kerry's, support of the war in Iraq? And more, just like a complete, violently opposed to the war, I should say pacifistically opposed to the war. And I'm looking at him, he's looking at me, and he say, well, President Kerry would have never attacked Iraq. But Senator Kerry did, of course. So you got to give me a break here. Yes, there are differences, and to dismiss them is to dismiss very lightly the concerns, for example, of African-American voters, of poor people, of teachers, of union workers and others who really have a lot on the line.
Actually, almost everyone other than the people in the top 10%, particularly the top 5 and 1%. But
and they have a lot at stake, too. They want to keep what they got.
Sure. Yeah. Well, we only have a few minutes.
Remember, this is class war now.
Yeah, except only the conservatives have declared it.
They're the only ones shooting.
Yes, they're the only ones shooting. I like that.
And then if you raise questions like, how come the rich people are taking all the money, the answer is, you're being a demagogue.
Mm-hmm.
The demos, the people. So, and, I don't know what to do except tell the truth on them. That's the other thing is that I did put out, you're right, all these things that I've been hawking. But you can read. Until Patriot Act 3, you can still read my book, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, because I have a new elections edition out, which has some of this stuff about the new shenanigans. And, that's all I can do at this point is try to get the word out. And Peter, bless you for
for giving me a platform.
Well, here, I don't know if this might be too complicated a sentence, or rather subject in 2 minutes, but at Greg Palast, P-A-L-A-S-T, gregpalast.com, you talk about the Venezuelan referendum that's coming up. This is being recorded on Tuesday. We're going to play it the Sunday of the referendum.
Yes.
And you ask, will the gang that fixed Florida fix the vote in Caracas this Sunday? So we will probably be able to announce the results on my later shows. What's going on there?
Well, what's going on there is a guy named Hugo Chavez. Unlike our president, he was elected by a large majority of the vote of his countrymen. And except he's committed a sin, which was to say that the oil companies, and Venezuela is the biggest oil producer in South America, that the oil companies ought to pay more than a fragment, more than 16% of the value of the oil that they pull out of Venezuela. And for that sin, he's been the target of sabotage, coup d'etats, you name it, which have been clearly orchestrated by our U.S. State Department and some of the berserkers there, the neocon berserkers. Now we've, you know, through money, by the way, paid for by the U.S. taxpayer, where we're, you know, paying his opposition parties, which is, you know, imagine if Venezuela did that in America.
Sure.
They have put together a recall vote. And so he's facing a recall, the president, and he could win or lose. But one of the problems is that, you remember I told you at the during the program that there are all these people in Florida, black people called felons and criminals, who lost their vote. Well, the company that came up with that evil little list was now hired by our Homeland Security operation to provide lists of voters in Venezuela. Now, what does that have to do with our Homeland Security? I thought these guys were supposed to be fighting terrorists. Instead, they seem to be figuring out how to fix elections in Florida. In Venezuela. And, you know, that's where our war on terror money is going. It's going to fix elections in Venezuela, to fix elections in Brazil and Argentina. And in the meantime, by the way, while that's happening, we are doing virtually nothing to get our friends, the Saudis, to stop giving money to the people who are blowing us up, you know, which is the other side of the coin. See, when we're messing around in Venezuela and undermining governments, democratically elected governments, we're basically giving a free pass to these dictators in robes called the royal family of Saudi Arabia.
Greg, we're out of time. Unfortunately, because this can't all be told now. Go to gregpalast.com, P-A-L-A-S-T.com. Check out the brand new, the Joker's Wild, W is Trick deck, an actual deck of cards that is just filled with information, the kind of information that was in Greg's best-selling, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. And Greg Palast, thanks so much for joining me on the Peter Werby Show.
Peter, you're a gem. Thanks. Bye.
You're listening to WRIF.com. Get your clubs ready and head out to Treetops Resort. Treetops, located in Gaylord, Michigan, is home to the number one par 3 course in the U.S. Treetops is proud to be rated the top golf course to play by Golf Magazine, as well as being recognized as being a silver medal award winner. Also ranked by USA Today as the top 10 places to take dad, this is certainly a place where you need to be. There are 4 unforgettable courses, 3 of them designed by top-notch golfers. So call now and make certain you're able to take in the incredible sights of Treetops Resort. Call 1-888-TREETOPS. That's 1-888-TREETOPS. Be sure to ask for the WRIF Stay and Play offer for just $99 during the month of August. That's 1-888-TREETOPS for this special price. Oh, and when you call, make sure you ask for the great prices on ski packages available for this winter. Offer subject to availability. Some restrictions apply. The $99 Stay and Play offer won't last forever, so call now. 1-888-TREETOPS.
Time is running out. Time is running out on the best deal ever, on your opportunity to make an investment that can help you make more money, that will change your life forever. Time is running out on your chance to register for Oakland Community College's fall 2004 semester. Final walk-in registration for fall classes is on August 30th and September 1st. Register on the web or visit any of OCC's 5 convenient campuses to sign up for your choice of thousands of day, night, and weekend classes in literally hundreds of subjects like business, psychology, computer information,
information systems, physics, English, pre-engineering, robotics, and more. If you want to take a giant step to a better life, Oakland Community College is your educational answer. Call or visit your local OCC campus now. They're in Auburn Hills, Waterford, Farmington Hills, Royal Oak, and Southfield. Remember, final walk-in registration is August 30th and September 1st. Oakland Community College. Get anywhere from here.
Fall classes begin September 2nd.
This is WRIM.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We talked to Gene Simmons of Kiss. And of course, we had to ask about Peter and our dear friend Ace.
They're both sweethearts. Hopefully, they're taking care of their health, which is more important than being on tour in a rock band.
Well, there's just so many comical aspects to him also. Just the business of him, like that he likes to take things apart, but he rarely puts them back together again. And
I've given him a few cell phones. You know, if they didn't, they had a click or something. Yeah. Let me fix it. He tears them apart. I'm going, oh, that's what the inside looks like.
Yeah.
I'm going, okay, can I have it back? It's not working.
Not a chance. Not a chance. There's no way that cell phone's going back together again.
You don't let him do that in your studio, do you?
Stop letting him do lots of stuff.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast program. On the Riff.
Riff.
Tuesday on the Riff. Every Tuesday, 101 WRIF,
the home of rock and roll,
brings you Tuber Tuesday. Keep it locked on the Riff all day this Tuesday for back-to-back badass blasts of your favorite Riff rock band.
Plus, the Riff gives you the hottest tickets to the coolest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Tuber Tuesday.
Double the Riff rock.
Double the Riff prizes.
Learn it. Know it. Live it.
Tuber Tuesday on the Riff. From 101 WRIF. If it rocks.
It really rocks.
Well, begin transmission.
Here comes the music.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
Mike tried to get through a review of some art house flick, House of Sand and Fog. Yeah, there's a big budget thriller. Anyway, the Peanut Gallery had a pretty short attention span for this one.
Her dad had this house. She ended up getting the house, and she never opened her mail. And eventually the city took the house from her. She's trying to get the house
boring.
Back. And they're and basically these foreigners moved in and they built a port.
Thank you very much. Thank you for joining me. About 15 years ago or so, I interviewed William Ashcroft. Some of you people have been listening for a long time may remember that. The book was called The Late Great Lakes. It said our Great Lakes around us are in pretty dreadful shape unless something remedial is done. We are going to essentially have some dead lakes on our hands. There's a new book out. Dave Dempsey has written it. It's called On the Brink, The Great Lakes in the 21st Century. And Dave Dempsey is the policy advisor for the Michigan Environmental Council. He was an environmental advisor to Michigan Governor James Blanchard and was appointed by President Clinton to serve on the Great Lakes Fishery Commission. And Dave Dempsey took time out from his vacation in Pennsylvania to join me on the Peter Werby Show. Dave Dempsey, welcome to the broadcast.
Hi, Peter. Nice to be with you.
Now, what does this say that 15 years ago, actually the book was written 16 years ago, William Ashworth wrote The Late Great Lakes. Was he being a chicken little?
Well, you know, I'm a big fan of that book. It really was the book that awakened me to the problems the Great Lakes face. I think his prediction was just off by a little bit in terms of time. What we face now are problems that he was predicting then that are just really starting to loom large on our horizon. Our Great Lakes are really in peril, drifting toward disaster right now.
Well, it's certainly not empirically so. When I go out to any of the lakes that I usually do, Michigan, Huron, Erie primarily, sometimes to Ontario, they seem just fine. I mean, why doesn't it just hit you in the face if it's so dramatic?
Well, for several reasons. First, a lot of the threats are invisible, including some new chemicals that are showing up, a class of fire retardants that are much like the PBBs that were banned in Michigan back in the 70s are showing up in fish and even in human breast milk in women. And the other thing is the threats that are causing the greatest disturbance to the system are below the water, and that's the alien species that are coming in on ships from other continents.
Yeah, well, in fact, that's one of the things I wanted to talk about, were these invaders into our ecosystem. I mean, now that I'm going to be taking down 8 ash trees on my property, those are airborne, or not airborne, but rather, these beetles that kill the trees here in Michigan. We're going to lose millions of them. Same thing happens. They come in on ships. We during the 50s, there was a large problem with, what were they called? Lamprey eels, right?
Right, sea lamprey. Well, they're still here. Actually, when I served in the Great Lakes Fishery Commission, our main job was to make sure there's enough money appropriated every year to control the lamprey. It's always here. And the rule with these alien species is once they get in, you can't get rid of them. You may be able to control them, but you'll never entirely get rid of them. So the Great Lakes, from that perspective, are permanently changed.
Well, why do they have such an impact? I mean, or why don't, at least after a while, I mean, if they come in and they don't have any predators and they find a nice place to live, like the zebra mussels and what have you, why after a while isn't there a balance reached where that something takes care of them?
Well, you have to remember the Great Lakes system evolved over 8 or 9,000 years since the last glaciers retreated, and the life forms in the lakes evolved in balance with each other. And once you bring in a creature that has no predators here, it can basically take command, or at least certainly disrupt the ecosystem. And so we're seeing crashes of some of the favorite sport fish or commercial fish in the Great Lakes, like the yellow perch, the walleye in Lake Erie, that are in decline. I guess the rule is you got to keep these invaders out, and the reason we're not doing it is because of powerful industries that benefit from letting them in, and that's the shipping industry and the port industry. That's the rule in the Great Lakes. Our history over 150 years has been that there is always a political force that benefits from short-term exploitation of the lakes, but it costs us all in the long run.
Yeah, well, actually, Dave Dempsey, you took one of my questions away, which, and good for you, which is who in the world would oppose policies and whatever else we need to control all of this? But when I was a kid, the lamprey eels were, everybody was thought that was just going to wipe out the fish in the lakes. How badly did they, what kind of damage did they do, and how eventually, you say, brought under control? How was that accomplished?
Well, it was an amazing thing, really. In just a few short years, the lake trout of Lake Huron went from a catch of over several million pounds to less than 1,000, believe it or not. So it was a huge decline. And there was fear that most of the native fish would be wiped out. So the U.S. and Canada jointly launched this aggressive research effort to figure out a way to control the lamprey. And they found a chemical that appears to mostly target the lamprey. So each year, streams throughout the Great Lakes are treated with this chemical, meaning we have to spend money forever to deal with the lamprey. It's never going to disappear. And the same is true of the more famous zebra mussel, which we spend roughly $1 billion a year in the Great Lakes Basin to control, to keep them from clogging water intakes and doing other damage.
I was going to ask about those little creatures. We don't hear much about the zebra mussel anymore. Are they under control?
No, they're not actually they're under control if you take into account the fact that we're spending billions of dollars over decades to control them. They are not under control. If we let them go, they would rebound. Right now what we have, and I think it should alarm a lot of people who care about the Great Lakes, is a dead zone in Lake Erie that's developing every summer in the last 5 summers that's happened. That last happened in the 1960s, and it's believed both the zebra mussel and the quagga mussel, by upsetting the Lake Erie ecosystem, have helped contribute to this really death of the center of the lake.
Well, a lot of sport fishermen probably had their ears perked up, and I don't know who else. What are the impact on all of us? I mean, if there's a dead zone in the middle of Lake Erie, someone might say, well, I go to Point Pelee, I see birds, I sit on the beach, I hike around there, everything looks pretty nice. Why should I care if there's a dead zone in the middle of Lake Erie once a year?
One answer to that would be that divided we fall, united we stand. If we start assuming that parts of the Great Lakes can suffer or degrade and it won't hurt us, I think we're on our way to really giving them up. And remember, it's 18% of the world's surface fresh water, and we've learned in the last 30 years about the interconnection of the ecosystem. So When one element of the Great Lakes condition deteriorates, usually there are others that will follow. Right now, Lake Erie may be a threat only to some people who care about fishing or swimming in the middle of Lake Erie, but the same threats, the exotic, the alien species and the pollutants are present throughout the basin. And I guess the point of the book is not just to look at what's going on now, but to say there are some really ominous threats looming. One of those would be the threat of climate change. There's models that predict the levels of Lake Huron in Michigan could fall 5 feet in this century, and that's going to have huge impacts on recreational boaters, swimmers, commercial shipping. We're all in this Great Lakes boat together once you look at it that way.
Dave Dempsey is my guest, and the book he mentions that he's the author of is On the Brink, The Great Lakes, the 21st Century. It's published by Michigan State University Press, my almost alma mater. I remember William Ashworth, who we mentioned at the beginning of the show, who wrote kind of a pioneer book, The Late Great Lakes, looking at the problems of our lakes around us. And he, I think I interviewed him about his second book, which you may remember the title. It's actually out of my...
Great Lakes Journey?
Great Lakes Journey. And he went around pretty much the perimeter of all the lakes, which is an extraordinary journey. And it occurred to me how much so we take the lakes for granted. I mean, it's because we're all raised here, the ones of us that were. And they, when we want to go to you know, Lake Huron or Lake Michigan, there, I think the awesome bodies of water that they are just doesn't have perhaps the proper impact on all of us. Or maybe I'm just speaking for myself, but do you think that we perhaps don't comprehend kind of geological entity they are?
Absolutely. I mean, the Great Lakes are a wonder of the world, the natural world, with 18% of the surface fresh water. Just in Michigan alone, we have 3,300 miles of shoreline. One of the points of the book and the point of a lot of the work that I've done at the Michigan Environmental Council is that citizens will decide if the lakes rise or fall. We had a huge outpouring of citizen interest and energy in the Great Lakes in the late 60s and 70s, and that's what drove politicians to pass the Clean Water Act and all the other things that have cleaned up the Great Lakes. They aren't hearing from people now, and that's why the Great Lakes are in decline. So I think it's partly that we take them for granted and partly this whole society-wide decline in people getting involved in government.
I know there is a body called the International Joint Commission that has some, I don't even know the word I'm looking for because I don't know if supervisory capacity is even correct, because we continue to get pollution even though the IJC's mandate is zero pollution, yet it continues. Why does it? Well, name some of the, if you would, please, some of the sources of pollution and why they can continue.
Sure. Well, one of the main sources is us. A lot of large communities, including southeast Michigan and Detroit, still flush large amounts of raw sewage into the Great Lakes. And raw sewage includes untreated chemicals. Our sewer systems are antiquated. Secondly, a lot of industries that benefit from fouling the lakes will resist any attempt to control some of those chemicals. This fire retardant problem I mentioned, these chemicals are manufactured by companies in the Great Lakes Basin and then used by companies, and they go into the water, and they affect fish and wildlife, and they're believed to also impair the development of children, the brain development of children. So industries are not being responsible, and I guess the final concern is a lot of the things that we have already banned here in the Great Lakes are still being used in other parts of the world, and we're learning that the Great Lakes are connected to the atmosphere of even other continents. So even DDT, which Michigan banned first back in 1969, can be found in Great Lakes fish.
I remember telling this little story of mine to William Ashworth when I interviewed him about 15 years ago in terms of our consciousness about what's downstream. And when I was a kid and we used to change our own oil on our cars, we'd dump it down the sewer and say, "Hello, Cleveland." You know, no, I mean, which is pretty hideous when you think about it. We had a consciousness of where it was going. We didn't have any, and we must have thought it negative, or we wouldn't have put that spin on it. But most of us, I mean, I think when you do surveys of people, 90% of the people say that they're concerned about the environment. We ought to live in a pollution-free world, and yet. We're not making the progress. I was hesitating to say whether we've made no progress, some progress, or whatever. But if we're on the brink, your title of your book, Dave Dempsey, the consciousness hasn't translated into public policy.
No, it really hasn't. In fact, it's gotten worse. If you look back at the late 60s and 70s, as I said, you can see people, and I documented these citizen heroes in the book who, whether they were car dealers or housewives, as we used to call them, got so furious about a particular pollution problem that they literally wouldn't, they grabbed it like a bulldog and wouldn't let go until somebody passed a law or cleaned it up. We're seeing some of that today, but not nearly as much. And I guess the concern I have is a fear that all of these threats added up are going to overwhelm us. One we haven't talked about is the worldwide shortage of fresh water. And if anybody doubts that the Great Lakes are going to become a canteen for the world, they're deluded. Unless we get our act together as a region and start building walls to protect the water, we're going to be seeing it shipped, whether by canals or barges, to other parts of the U.S. and maybe other continents.
Well, can that happen? Because I know people in Phoenix that are going to run out of water pretty soon within this century are looking towards our water here, but since it's boundary water, I mean, it doesn't, the Great Lakes doesn't belong to the United States and certainly doesn't belong to Michigan. Canada says, well, wait a minute, you're not going to be, aren't they just absolutely adamant that there's never going to be a transshipment of water out of the lakes?
Canada has passed a ban on bulk export of water, but the alarming thing to me is that the state of Michigan is now not just tolerating but actually sanctioning the privatization of water, the bottled water controversy in west central Michigan, where what used to be Perrier, it's now Nestle, has begun bottling and selling Michigan water, implies to many lawyers that I've talked to that water is no longer going to be considered a resource that we all own as the public, but a commodity that companies can sell at their will. And if that happens, no country is going to be able to veto it. We're all aware, I think, of the free trade agreements that basically have knocked down barriers to the shipment of goods across international lines, and that may be where we're headed, and that's a huge worry. There are, I could quote you a lot of politicians, including congressmen from Dick Armand, who believe that Texas, Arizona, Minnesota, not Minnesota, excuse me, Texas, Arizona, and New Mexico are going to need the water, and they'll get it because they have clout in Congress.
Yeah, and that's right. I forgot about things like everything from the Free Trade Acts, you know, NAFTA, and now the FTAA and the World Trade Organization, all of that. You can't just you can't interfere with international trade. So if folks want our water down in Phoenix, even though it's partly Canadian, I guess under these trade rules, they got it.
Once it's established as a commodity, that's true.
Yeah.
And I guess what I want to emphasize is that Michigan has so much to do with the rise and fall of the Great Lakes in this century. We're the only state entirely in the Great Lakes Basin. Every other state, and there are seven others in the U.S. that has some Great Lakes shoreline, has divided loyalties. We have states like Ohio and Indiana that want to divert Great Lakes water because part of their land base is outside the Great Lakes. So we're going to have to be the strongest and most unflinching advocate of the lakes, which I'm not sure we're always being these days.
Dave Dempsey, I have had the pleasure of hosting the annual State of the Detroit River Boat Tours that are sponsored by the Citizens Environment Alliance, centered mostly in Windsor, but also a presence here in southeast Michigan. And we're going to be doing another tour on September 18th. And one of the things that we do on these tours is certainly to point out all the problem spots and all of the, you know, what needs protecting. But we also talk about victories and what has been accomplished and what a few spots that have remained pristine. In your travels around the Great Lakes and thinking about and writing your book On the Brink, maybe tell us the best and the worst. Let's at least start off with the best. When you, hopefully there is something you can answer to this. Are there bright spots in our Great Lakes?
Oh, there are huge bright spots. If you look at the mess that we were in 30 years ago, we really dealt with the obvious problems. Phosphorus levels are down over 70%, and that's because government, responding to citizens, banned phosphorus in laundry detergents, or at least strictly limited it. We've got a number of cleanups underway in some of the most contaminated areas in the Great Lakes Basin. Some of the harbors like Milwaukee, Saginaw Bay, and others are being cleaned up, and we're seeing fisheries come back. We're seeing a lot more citizen activism in the sense of water monitoring programs that involve volunteers. There's a woman up in the Sheboygan area of Michigan, who has made it her duty to guard the very rare, very unique, and very exotic, in a good way, a lake sturgeon from being decimated. She gets out there with volunteers every spring to make sure that they're not poached. And, you know, these are fish that can grow to 6 feet long and live over 100 years, so they're quite a majestic part of the system. So I would say the bright spots are the citizen energy here and there. I think the worst is probably the growing callousness on the part of our governments toward the future of the lakes, whether it be Ohio and Indiana wanting to divert Great Lakes water, or right now the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is basically studying whether or not we should spend billions of dollars to bring in more ocean-going vessels and therefore more alien species and further disrupt the Great Lakes. So we've got government as the enemy in many cases.
Now, actually, both those were good answers. I was interested more sort of empirically. What if, when you go out there and you look at something and you say, this is the way it should be, you know, physically. This is where I want to go. This is where I want to take my family. Or the opposite, when you go somewhere and look and say, I can't believe that humans have done this to nature.
Okay, I think the best, an example of the best would be the restoration of Northern Lake Michigan. There's a particularly great project in the Traverse City area, a watershed project run by one of the local officials that has begun addressing the root sources, everything from the used oil that you were talking about to storm sewers. And the bay is in really healthy shape because of that. And there's a lot of economic benefit coming to the community.
It looks extraordinarily beautiful to me. In fact, going up, I can't remember, all of a sudden the route up to Northport is out of my brain that goes out of the out of Traverse City. But it is an extraordinary, beautiful ride. So it's good to know that there's nothing, as you said earlier, lurking beneath the surface of any real danger. And where would we go or not go to see something really awful and frightening?
Well, the visible area might be northwest Indiana along Lake Michigan, where you can just, on a summer day, smell the pollution in the air and see the way in which the shoreline has been really devoured by ugly industrial development. But I have to say, closer to home and under the water, the Detroit River is a very serious problem, not just because of the raw sewage that I mentioned, but also there are tons and tons of mercury and PCB contaminated bottom muds in the river that need to be cleaned up, and there's really nothing going on that right now.
Well, when I've kayaked on the Detroit River, or you know, just been on something like Belle Isle with my dog, I see people fishing, and I think, I don't know if I'd like to eat these fish that are coming out of that river. Would you eat them, Dave Dempsey?
The Detroit River?
Yeah.
I would eat them guardedly. I think the most concern I would have would be for women of childbearing age and kids because of the PCB and mercury issues. You know, PCBs, a landmark study done by folks at Wayne State, delay the brain development of young kids. So as a 47-year-old white male who's a tough old buzzard, I guess I have less concern about myself, but I do think women of childbearing age, basically in the Great Lakes region, should very, very strictly limit their consumption of Great Lakes fish.
Well, you know, I traveled on a Greenpeace boat one summer up and down the Great Lakes. They were touring it, and I remember that I told one of the people on board that I had swam in four of the five Great Lakes that summer, and they looked at me, and I think they were from either Germany or Sweden. They said, I would not swim in any of it. Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's that bad, is it?
No, swimming in most areas of the lakes is quite safe. And again, I think when I say on the brink, as the title of my book, I want to stress it means we're on the threshold either of the final fall and degradation of the lakes, or if we wake up as citizens, I think we can show the world that the Great Lakes can be a model for how you live in harmony with the environment. But too many of our attitudes toward the lakes are still based on what I think of as 19th century thinking, that we can improve the lakes, or we can manipulate them, or we can rearrange them to suit our will. And every time we've done that, we've had unanticipated disasters result. I mean, I'm sure everybody, many people can remember when the Rouge River in Detroit, the Cuyahoga River in Cleveland caught fire, and that's the kind of thing that we thought would never happen. Mm-hmm. The fallacy of the Great Lakes for most people is we look at them and we go, they're so big, we couldn't possibly affect them. The lumber barons of Michigan thought the same thing in the 1850s, that we had so much timber it could last forever no matter how much we cut, and they cut it down in one generation. I think we can also see that we're so numerous we could dramatically degrade the Great Lakes in one generation.
Well, we only have about 2 minutes left, and I can't begin to tell you how many times I use this phrase towards the end of interviews, and that is the political will. Dave Dempsey, you've written this incredible book, On the Brink, the Great Lakes in the 21st Century, clarion call to let us know what the potentials for disaster are. But at the same time, you expressed a concern during this interview that the popular will isn't there. We have these large mega forces with extraordinary amounts of money that part of their... that they have a vested interest in continuing things as they are, a recipe for disaster. How do we find the popular or political will to change things? I mean, you've done your part. What else can be done?
Well, two things have to happen. One is citizens need to mobilize. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy to say that the system is out of control and we can't do anything about it. If citizens don't show up or raise heck about the problem, then nothing will happen. I guess the other thing that I think is important, and I guess I would certainly favor campaign finance reform so a lot of the powerful interests that benefit from fouling the Great Lakes would be brought to heel. But we've got to bring democracy closer to people. And one of the ideas in the book and in a related study that I did for the Michigan Environmental Council is to start going to citizens instead of asking citizens to go to faraway places in the Great Lakes Basin. We need to have sort of a Great Lakes capital on the Internet where people can log in and directly communicate with their legislators is just one example. We've got to really rethink democracy is what I'm trying to say.
Well, I think that's extraordinarily important for every aspect of this society. I mean, we're ostensibly a democratic society, but more and more elites rule our lives and our environment. Well, I want to thank you for sharing your time with us, Dave Dempsey. I know you took time out from your vacation. Let me just read what former Governor William Milliken, Governor of Michigan, said. Remember when there were moderate Republicans? He says, the Great Lakes, I won't ask you for a response, the Great Lakes are a global treasure that we take for granted at our own peril. In this book, Dave Dempsey contrasts the majesty of the Great Lakes and the affection shown them by individuals with the history of their neglect and mistreatment by government and others. So, as I said just a minute ago, the warning is here. The rest is up to us. And I was looking on the literature for a website. I see the MSU press.msu.edu website. Is there any one that links directly to your book?
Yeah, the MSU Press site does that. There's also a site, my author's site, davedempsey.org.
All right, and I will put that on my website as well. So, Dave Dempsey, thanks for joining me on the Peter Werbe Show.
Thank you, Peter. I enjoyed it.
Thank you for tuning in to the RIFS Night Call. Night Call is a public affairs presentation of 101 WRIF Detroit. The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect those of the management or sponsors of WRIF Radio or Greater Media Detroit. Night Call is hosted every Sunday night by Peter Werbe. Now stay tuned for more Riff Rock, coming right up on 101 WRIF Detroit.
It's party time. Get a real feel of erotic image featuring Michigan's hottest male and female strippers.
Erotic image. Add a stripper to any party and watch your party come alive.
Erotic Image delivers the sexiest and most seductive entertainers right to your doorstep or wherever the party's at.
For your next bachelor, bachelorette, birthday, or any party occasion, give the gift that unwraps itself. Call Erotic Image at 888-41-STRIP.
Erotic Image, the name that says it all. Sexy, provocative, outrageous, but all in good fun.
Erotic Image, 888-41-STRIP.
Surf Erotic Image at eroticimage.com, the official home of Brutal Betty, the Erotic Image Dream Girls, the incredible hunks of Men in Motion, and those naughty awesome twosomes, the wild girly girls. Due to popular demand, Erotic Image has hosts and hostesses to kick off your party. Try one.
Go online and explore the Erotic Image Cyber Showcase, view the dancers, check their prices, and place your order online.
Erotic Image, where image is expertise, and the experience is always erotic.
Call Erotic Image at 888-41-STRIP. That's 888-41-STRIP.
Erotic Image, where image is everything.
Hello, baby. This is the king. The king of car shopping, that is. But it ain't too tough to be the king when you're rocking with Dick Scott Kia in Canton and Dick Scott Kia of Waterford, baby. With a job on $199, man, even you could be approved for a brand new car.
Do you have a job? Do you have $199? Dick Scott Kia in Canton and Dick Scott Kia of Waterford can get you approved for a brand new Kia Rio. Starting at just $7,899. Plus, every new Kia is backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty. Do you have a job?
I'm the king, baby.
Do you have $199?
Well, I've...